live from the DMZ between Mimeville and Clowntown. This is Culture Vultures with Dirk and Otto, episode number 179 for June 22nd, 2018. Greetings, everybody. I'm your host, Dirk Belurgent. With me now, the Marcel Marceau to my Pennywise, the punk band, Otto the Autopilot. Say hello, Otto. Ah. Okay, he's nodding his affirmation that he is acknowledging what's going on. I should have made you Harpo or something. That way you can at least honk a horn. Oh,
bell works.
And you heard
Hello, okay, there. I thought you'd get it. Mime, hello, Marcel Marceau.
No, I'm reading my notes, and I'm like, well, say something, say something. It's like, is the microphone not turned on?
We lead them to the water, but they never drink.
I
love you.
I just forget that you're so smart that you think about these things. Anyway, if you heard another voice coughing in the background,
that's
we
me.
Are joined by a guest tonight in the hangar. We have Russell Taylor, or we call him Russ, better known as Satori Circus, and he'll be here talking about his new show, Stroke, which is coming next week at the Tangent Gallery. If you are just discovering us because you're thinking, oh, I know the one guy who's on the show this week, so I'm going to listen for the first time, we are Culture Vultures. We are what we call Random Access Talk. It's as if ADD had ADD. We talk about TV, movies, genre stuff, comic books, video games, saving money, stuff. All sorts of stuff. And occasionally we talk about the culture. We want to get good and heavy about things.
Yeah. So, try to have fun, though. We've been doing pretty good about that, bringing things heavy. We've been keeping it light.
Yes,
we have. But we've also been hard.
But we'll be talking about abusive relationships to start things off. But also later on the show, Incredibles 2. Pixar made a lot of money, as expected. And what's not going things and things
That's
like
incredible.
This. That's incredible. Title. Alrighty then. Anyway, yes, if you are discovering us for the first time through Podcast Detroit or SoundCloud or Reddit or FaceSpace or Russ's emailed it out, culturevulturesradio.com. It's culturevultures with an S radio.com. Go there. You can subscribe to the podcast on
not
iTunes.
No Z?
No.
No Z.
Oh,
no.
Man.
We're all about the S's.
All right.
Yes, we have all our vowels. We're not like, Twitter or Grindr or all the other Flickr that lose their last vowel. We're more evolved than
and
that.
And I haven't twatted yet, so, I'm looking forward to sometime in the not-too-distant future getting twatting
and
on Twitter.
And as
is that proper pronunciation?
And part of that hell freezes over thing, Sterling Silver, who we did an episode with back a couple of years ago, I'll throw a link in the show notes for this episode 178, he's 179, he's joining FaceSpace, and he announced it like any guy in his 60s would do. He sent a group text out to everybody, so I'm getting all the replies. Thanks a
Welcome
lot!
Welcome to the 21st century, Sterling!
It's always good when he puts his old man glasses on, and he's like poking away at the smartphone.
Hey! Have you seen the Facebook? Have you seen the Facebook?
You
can do all kinds of stuff on that Facebook.
You know what it's going to be like?
I got friends.
It's going to be exactly like the commercial with the old ladies where it says, that's not how this works. That's not how any of this works.
Well, haven't you seen my walls?
Yes. Anyway, culturevulturesradio.com. You can subscribe to us on iTunes and Stitcher. We are on Spotify right now. You can find us at Culture Vultures. All the episodes are there for downloading or live streaming. And you'll also find the show notes, which is like a liner notes commentary track. You'll also find links to our
8 million fucking videos that this boy loves. Up because of our inane references. It just, you got to give him a shout out while we have a guest. Let me fillet you for a moment here, Mr. Belligerent. You
this
do
is
a great
job now. Now,
that.
Now HR is going to want to talk to both of us. but also, episode 178, which was the last week's episode, The Validator. We had like a dozen
Thank
movie
you
trailers,
for that, by the way,
and they were all embedded there, so you don't have to go looking around. We provide everything to you. Anyway, one of the big mop up things we want to clear away before we get in with Russ here is
Story Circus.
Satori Circus.
Yeah.
Satori Circus.
I told him in the pre-meeting.
Russ is gone for right now.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Hi, Satori.
I'm sorry. Russ has left the building. Satori is here.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're going to have a neighbor coming in later. Sweet poly purebred. Anyway.
I actually have two of those poly. Next door to the hangar. Yeah, I'll have you know, sir.
Mm. Ooh,
two of the sweetest ooh. Girls you've ever met.
Do they like candles?
Once again, this is radio.
They're a couple, so... I just hope they invite me to
they
the wedding.
Like candles. Hey, that's okay, man. Tell them you know somebody that can marry him.
You can? Oh, that's
Absolutely.
Right. You can. That's right. I almost forgot about that.
Yes, you can.
You are a man of many hats.
I'm three
okay,
for four.
So anyway, last week when we were going in to begin taping, the news had broken about Chris Hardwick being supposedly a big scumbag. Now, one of the shocking details on the side, though, was how Hermione... My girlfriend or
Meow.
Slash ex neighbor's cat. Anyway, she was like, this sounds like 50 Shades of Grey. This sounds like a vindictive, spiteful woman. She doesn't believe it. I'm like, but what about me too? And she wasn't down with that. Well, anyway, also afterwards, people like Chris Gore, who's not the least bit jealous of the success of Chris Hardwick or anything.
No. Shouldn't be. His name is Chris too.
He was trashing.
Chris is a very nice name.
He was trashing
Chris Pratt,
him.
Chris Evans, Pine.
A lot of people were trashing.
Chris Hemsworth.
There was, a call for Yvette Nicole Brown, who's a super fan, to take over Talking Dead. But here what was interesting is that...
I thought they would have given it to the lady of color. I can't remember her name, but the girl who keeps the notebook.
Yvette Nicole Brown.
Oh, that's her?
Yes.
I'm sorry, I thought she had a different name.
No, that's...
I was looking at her, a sassy black girl with the notebook, checking my privilege and all, but...
She's from a Community.
Oh,
she's,
cool.
She's wonderful. But anyway, good honor. She'd be terrific, and I could see...
Could have taken no better replacement.
I could see Aisha Tyler getting all the rest of her stuff, too, but... Anyway, what happened, though, is that... So it's kind of like, okay, what's going to happen? Because we said at the time, it all depends on what his response is going to be.
Well, right.
First of all... and we had to love this, but Will Wheaton, our dear friend.
Will Wheaton?
Yes,
had something to add to this?
Yes.
The Next Generation?
The Next Generation.
Stand By Me?
Shut up, Wesley. Well, anyway, Will Wheaton, the scourge of the internet, he basically was like, I'm going to need some time to process about what's going on with my best friend, which got him dragged because, you know, he's always been Mr. Social Justice and Believe, but suddenly he was getting really punk and quiet, and you want to go for that already?
Hell yeah.
Blow the horn.
You're just bullshit.
Perfect. So anyway,
unreal.
He was getting dragged.
Fuck you, Wesley.
He's getting dragged because he didn't want to come out and say anything.
Mr. Crusher, report to my ready room.
Well, anyway, the next day, Hardwick finally put out a statement saying, "I didn't do this. I didn't do this at all."
But then he made the fatal mistake. Talk about the fatal mistake he made.
Which is the fatal mistake?
We had our problems and our differences. Bam! Everybody sees that as,
I don't know who Chris Hardwick is.
Chris Hardwick is the guy who started a site called The Nerdist. Nerdist.com. And he hosts a podcast. Don't know anything about that. And, anyway, but he hosts like all these after shows on AMC, like Talking Dead after Walking Dead and Talking Saul and Talking Bad. He, you know, basically there are these after shows like after you've watched the show, then we have people from the show come in.
It's pretty much what it boils down to.
Well, anyway.
Oh, the show is so great. Wasn't it so great on the show tonight? That was so great.
You know, that
we're
one zombie.
About
wait a second. That one zombie was really good. No, you remember that one zombie?
And he took
missing
his
fingers.
Oh my
God. It was like missing fingers and trying to pick his nose. And it was like, dude, you got no fingers.
They went
how are you going to pick your nose? I don't go.
I couldn't even. I could not even.
1-800-DEAD-LIVE. Anyway, why does he always pull his hand up? I mean, that's so dumb. Anyway,
it was his affectation.
Affectation. Well, anyway, then God. The next word that broke was that he was, his show, he had an interview show. Just,
oh, yeah.
You know, stuff.
He
anyway,
was riding the wave, plus he hosted The Wall on NBC weeknights in the summer.
Well, anyhow, AMC said, yeah, we're going to hold off on airing his show until we get to the bottom of all this stuff.
Hook comes from the side.
He stepped away from hosting all his panels at Comic-Con.
Yeah, he had the Doctor Who panel too, man.
And the Hall H thing.
He was so ready to make his triumphant march through nerddom.
Right now,
I'm so glad this shit is collapsing in on itself.
It's not that you're angry against him or something, are you? Or are you just enjoying the Schadenfreude? Schadenfreude delicious.
Schadenfreude with a little bit of delicious irony. They eat themselves. It's nice to watch.
Schadenfreude and delicious. So anyway.
I'm bored.
Aisha Tyler's got to be acting like Tiffany Haddish right now. She's going to be like, yeah. So anyway. But Chris's mother-in-law, Patty Hearst.
Yeah, Patty Hearst.
Noted kidnap victim and domestic terrorist.
You married her daughter.
Oh, man.
And guess what Patty Hearst has been up to since she got free of the Symbionese Liberation
Quaaludes?
Front. And being,
Army.
Being
Army.
A society mother.
Also, she was in Serial Mom. She was in Serial Mom.
She was?
Yes.
Yeah, wasn't she in Crybaby or something like that?
She was in Serial. I know she was in Serial Mom for sure because she was the one that Kathleen Turner wanted to murder for wearing white after Labor Day.
Oh, that was Patty Hearst.
Yes.
Good.
Wow.
Good.
She's a great actor. She does her own stunts, I hear.
Well, anyhow. So anyway, she says, I believe that Chris is fine.
There's
and
a
this
reputable
woman is
source.
Horrible.
He's innocent.
It's been 45 years. I'm sure she's mostly deprogrammed by
this
now.
Shit, and I'm like, you know, she needs to shut the fuck up.
All right. Anyway, so we can move on to the things.
Yeah.
So anyway, Hermione sent me this thing. Now the whole breaking things. TMZ got text messages.
Oh,
because there is no privacy between Chloe Dykstra and Chris Hardwick.
Ooh, nice.
So anyway,
Chloe
Dykstra. She's the daughter of John Dykstra, the special effects guy who did Star Wars.
He also created the original Battlestar Galactica.
Yeah.
Oh,
anyway,
okay.
Yeah. He's an important guy in the business. He's like
he
Doug
basically
Trumbull.
Started Industrial Light and Magic. He
yeah.
was the
oh,
first.
All right.
He was the first honcho.
And this is his daughter.
His daughter, yes. Chloe. And anyway, so
she's hot too.
This is the article from TMZ. Chris Hardwick severed ties
sim breeding
with Chloe Dykstra in a lengthy text chronicling major issues in their relationship, and she pleaded to talk with him after to no avail, even months later. According to the text messages obtained by TMZ, through the NSA, I'm sure, Chris calls out Chloe for cheating on him with a man named Sam, saying, quote, "It's the worst thing anyone has ever done to me." Chris claims Chloe led him to believe she wanted to get back together with him after they broke up, but never stopped seeing Sam. Call
who,
Sam.
Who stopped seeing Sam? Chris or
Sam,
Chloe?
Sam was the dick she loved. Chris was the dick she wanted to love. You know, because Chris was the climber and Sam was the...
We don't know who Sam is.
Was
it's the
bottom.
Magic penis theory. You know women, and this is no slam on the gender, but they find a magic penis, and it doesn't matter what this penis does that's attached to it, they will always come back to it. Well, yeah, you burned my house down and, raped my cat, but
I'm sorry.
I like him.
I'm sorry,
kinda.
But I think you're mispronouncing wallet there. Okay.
Well, no, it isn't always about the wallet. It is not always about the wallet.
It helps.
I have a valve, so I don't know about the magic penis.
Maybe it's the pawlet.
A pawlet?
Well, penis and wallet. Pawlet?
That'd be
pellet. In some occasions, but that's a broad spectrum.
Or
I'm
the
just
weenus.
Saying,
it's
there
the weenus.
Are magic penises out there that cast a spell upon a woman who is completely... intelligent, thoughtful. She's like, you do everything right, but this one thing you don't do so right. Why is that? And they're like, I don't know.
It's the weenus, goes, weenus, it's the weenus.
Now, if I may speak for the men, and as a man with a valve, I can only speak for myself and other men of valves.
Speak for the inflatable men, please.
I don't have a valve.
You and Michelin Man.
Sometimes you find an insert that is so magical that you just want to keep going back to that insert.
Oh,
you want to keep climbing back in there.
It's called this.
Well,
okay,
Rosie never fits.
I don't have to shave her.
I'm talking about that special place.
I'm dating Miss Michigan. All right. Can I get through this so we can... All right,
I feel you on that one.
Too
many bell ring for that
too
one.
Too many sight gags. So anyway, let me complete this. Anyway,
Hardwick
more or less tells Dykstra in his long text messages that it will be the last time he talks to her and declares their relationship is over. And then she sends several texts backing to him saying, "I will always love you." According to the text thread, Chloe reached out to Chris 7 months later in an apparent attempt to make up. Sources close to Chris say it's hard to believe Chloe would try to for months to get back to him after being emotionally and sexually abused, as she has claimed. As we reported, he's denied the allegations and said their breakup after 3 years was because of her cheating. We've reached out to Chloe, but no word back. So anyway, that's where we're at right now. He still doesn't have his show, but, it's...
I'm sad, and I don't even know him.
Yeah, exactly. You know, we've given this, like, more than the 15 minutes it deserves.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I was trying to read through it quickly, but everyone had to comment.
Well, so, it was the weenus.
Yes.
The weenus.
The
all right,
the penis.
So now
I prefer Paulette.
Now for the reason we are all here.
God, why are we here?
Satori Circus is in the house.
There we go.
Thank you.
My backstory about this. First of all, it's like people are like, "Well, what's Satori Circus?" Because it's like
it's lasagna.
It's the other white meat. Title. So, anyhow, the thing is that the first time I saw Satori was probably at Dally in the Alley, I'm guessing 92 or 93. And he was closing the stage and he was doing this thing. And I'm like, what is this weird kind of
thing?
Multimedia stuff that's happening. But what is indelibly, seared into my memory is, Killer, the closing number that he used to do, which consisted of him performing bent over with his ass facing the audience, wearing a big, gigantic top hat. So it's like, Moominshants, but not. And he's singing, he's bent over. He's got a microphone behind him, but he's facing away from the audience. But there's a microphone in front. And then he, smokes a cigarette with his butt. And then he pulls a gun and starts shooting people in the audience. So this is the first time I saw Satori Circus. I'm like, okay, I need to stop hanging around with the bohos down in the cultural area. Wayne State's kind of weird. So anyway, jump ahead a couple years, and I didn't realize this was your first actual full show, but Banter was at 1515 Broadway and whatnot. And the thing is that before we, you know, before we tell him, have him tell us what's going on, the thing is, people think, well, it's like a mime because he wears white makeup. No, because he sings and stuff like this. Is it, you know, a clown? No, he's definitely not a clown. In fact, McHayton, the co-founder of Culture Vultures, he is afraid of clowns. Deathly afraid of clowns. I thought this was a joke until we were at a pizza place and there was a clown there.
Colophobia.
And he almost freaked out. I was like, what's wrong with you? And I look over, I'm like, oh my God, this is real, isn't it? You know, he was flipping.
Really?
But he always said that you were his favorite clown-shaped person.
Nice. So, thank you. Thank you very much.
There's a show title.
So, anyway, like he was able to handle you fairly well.
Well, but excuse me?
The other thing that people would describe it as is
the weenus.
Holly. Is Martha. So, is that performance art. But the thing is, performance art, nobody knows what it is. They either think Laurie Anderson or some version of something weird and stupid in a movie. So, now that we've explained what you're not really, what would you say you are? Sell the people who don't know you, who haven't been following you for the last 30 years on the premise.
Yeah, what are you?
Well, I started calling myself a performer. And then a gentleman by the name of Ed West, who was then Dean of Graduate Studies at U of M, saw one of my shows in 94, Adam.
Okay.
And saw that one and approached me because he was developing this new program, MFA program at U of M in Ann Arbor, and said, you know, we'd like for you to be a part of this. And he chose 9 others and then myself, making it 10. And I was the one that was the performer or performance artist. And I'd heard the term, but I didn't really have any kind of knowledge of what that really was. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, you go to U of M or you go to any college that has a substantial library and you have tons of shit to go through.
No shit.
And okay. It occurred to me doing the research and whatnot that, you know, really the birth of Satori Circus or me came exactly from that. And the term, it's loosely thrown around. You know, performance artists are like bastard children of theater, or there's no place for them in the art school.
Right.
They're sidewalk performers.
A mime that couldn't shut up.
Yeah. You know, that kind of stuff. A juggler.
I've heard that.
Yeah. It's a lot of different things, but the definition is basically, you know, an individual or a group of individuals, like Momenschanz, for instance, because they do physical stuff, but they also incorporate music, whether they write it themselves or not, I don't know. But it's usually a hybrid. It's taking a bunch of different mediums, you know, art mediums or just mediums, and pulling them together to create one bigger piece. And that's, you know, the hybrid. And since I was bringing music into it and slapstick and some avant-garde and surreal stuff and drag and everything else, it just... I was like, wow, yeah, I guess I kind of am a performance artist, because historically, you know, it goes back to Dada, Surrealists, even some of the Expressionists. It goes back to Leonardo da Vinci when he was making these small models and having wars in the bay of where he lived in Venice. It goes, and it really kind of started becoming its own thing with like Ellen Capro and the happenings of the 50s, and then you go into the 60s. And the ladies at Judson Church, like, you know, your Yvonne Rainer and Trish Brown and, believe it or not, Twala Tharp, these ladies, man, were making it happen. And they were using body and dance. They were creating different, like, types of dance. They were using film elements. They were using costumes. They were using a lot of different stuff. And then you start reading, and then you realize that, you know, Diaghilev from the Ballet Russe back in the 20s was, like, getting, like, you know, Arp and Stravinsky and Picasso and I'm forgetting the gentleman who did Beauty and the Beast, the filmmaker.
Oh, geez.
Cocteau. Bringing all
over
these...
Over my head, so you guys got... Yeah, you
I,
guys
have,
both
I have
got
no idea what he's talking about.
But all these guys, bringing these guys together, and they created
the... Cocteau arm, that's what it was.
But Stravinsky, like, you know, he wrote the music for it, and then you had... Cocteau, who was developing the libretto, and then you had Picasso, who's doing the sets. So you had all these greats all contributing to this one thing, that which was a dance. And that was a lot of that. That was performance art to me. You know, so I sometimes I think I am, and sometimes I don't want to be, you know, just because it's so watered down. It's so milky. It's
okay. But for my part, for what I've seen of you and since I've known you, you've never failed to interest, number one.
Thanks.
But
thanks.
You have a more inclusive yet still outside performance where I myself feel included in what you're doing. And I like it when you change up.
Thanks.
When you're throwing the curveballs. And that's one of the cool things, because now that I've known you for a bit, I've seen some repeat performances, but you always throw something a little bit different on each performance. So
I have to, man.
Do you
it's just
sometimes
for me.
Feel like Felix the Cat with the Bag of Tricks, where it's like, yes, okay, you've got like 10,000, you know, 10,000 things to choose from. Okay, I'm going to take item number one, item number 4,052, and item number 10. And these things are going to be
incorporated.
But it's always in the same, you know, it's coming out of the same bag.
Yeah.
But I like the variety that you throw in, you know, as someone who was, two things blew my mind in my life in performance. And the first was Moment Shots, I won't lie. And the second was watching you.
Yeah.
I shit you not.
Thanks, man.
I shit you
Thank
not.
You.
And I mean that sincerely.
Satori versus Moment Shots.
Yeah, right. Adam.
Well, no, I mean, in as far as bringing you in. You know, you do that, and you have a way of doing that, because it's so varied, and I always love how you're changing it up all the time.
Thanks, brother. And I appreciate that.
And I think you explained it perfectly.
And speaking of changing it up, let's quickly get the plug out of the way for this, because there is a major factor. Now, this year is going to be a super busy year. You've got a new show, and then you're going to be having a 30th anniversary.
Yay.
30th anniversary of Satori Circus coming up later this year. We'll talk about that in a while. But coming up on the 29th at Tangent Gallery is Stroke, which is a new show. And what's stunning about this, in fact, when I first saw the cards, I was like, what's with the color makeup? Satori Circus, as long as I've known him, has always had a white head. Okay, like a light bulb. And then he inks on bold.
Slightly bulbous, you know, white head.
Thank you very much.
Then he inks on black, you know, maybe a face of some sort. And it's always different. And do you like just on the spur of the moment, or is there a design for each thing? Or do you just kind of look at it and go, okay, today I'm doing the eyebrow up in the middle of my forehead, and then the smile is going to be near my ear?
It all depends. Like when I do a show, like let's say Adam or Banter or even some of the newer ones like Childproof, Poems We Tell Ourselves, Funny as Hell, those faces are unique to those shows.
Okay.
And I try my damnedest not to use those faces when I do guest spots, you know, like let's say, you know, Detroit, you know, the Erotic Poetry Music Festival, or, you know, some of the other side shows that I do with a lot of my sideshow performers. I always try to be different with my faces just to keep on changing them.
But, okay, question for my part, because I'm Otto and he's going to yell at me. Do you close your eyes and just go, or do you have something in mind and then do it?
I look.
After I put the
white base on, and I sit there for a couple seconds and I look. And
Does it come to you? Just like
sometimes
you can visualize it right there, and then bam. Are there other times? Curtain's going up in 30 seconds. I know.
Grabs a bystander.
Just kind of like,
draw something on my face.
It is all. It's all of that.
Make me look like.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it depends.
I mean, there's been times.
Good. Make me look like Target Dog.
As I've gotten older, you get a lot more wrinkles.
Yes.
And that is the fun part.
Oh, yeah?
You know, not necessarily doing a thin, straight line, because then I have to, like, move my face around and get one of those, you know? But, you know, when I, like, cringe or whatever, like, make a face and I see the wrinkles in my forehead and the crow's feet and on my face, I'm like, oh, wow, what's going on there? And then I'll try to mimic it with a, you know, a broad brush. And sometimes it's successful. Sometimes I'm, like, baby wipes, move it off, white, do it again. You know, and sometimes, like, oh, screw it, man. Just dots. Right. You know?
Well, what happened though is when I saw the photos, first photos for Stroke,
got bummed.
I was like, "What the hell's with the color?" He's wearing a multiple color.
He's
makeup.
Living in the hangar, and you know, it was like we had to bring Quick and Oreos. To
him. Okay. Listen. Anyway, so we I don't want to spend a half show, you know, dithering around. So anyhow, what was the impetus between after almost 30 years of the one thing, suddenly this big change up? It's almost like. you know, wait a minute, you know, They Might Be Giants has a band now. It was radical.
Just two guys. You know what? It had a lot to do with everything. I think it was just like everything kind of like folding in on itself. One, it's the 30th anniversary. Not that this colorful palette is going to take over, but it was an opportunity to work with my nephew who wrote basically the story that I based Stroke on.
Okay. What is Stroke?
Antonio Cosenza. He had a class, a creative writing class at Henry Ford College. Sorry. Growing up, we called it Hank High, not even Henry Ford Community College. So he went there and he had a creative writing class and they wanted to, you know, the thing was to do, write a story about whatever you wanted to, 250 words. And he wrote this song, story called The Painter. And, you know, he sent me a couple of his other things and he shared them with the family. And then he sent me this and I was like, I read it and I was like, dude, man, this is really wonderful. And pardon me. It was a piece about an artist who basically lives in squalor. He's kind of, off to himself, maybe a reject from the family because he was like so creative or so far out there. And as I was reading it, all I could think of was turn of the century, 1900, like 1895 to about 1910, Marseille, Berlin, Spain, you know, France. When you had all those crazy cats, man, from Klempt to Egon Schiele to, you know, Sontin to Modigliani, which immediately came to my head when I was like reading it was Modigliani. And then as I started thinking about it, Egon Schiele, who has always been one of my favorite painters, I wanted to bring him into this idea, and I approached my nephew and I said, "Hey, dude, you know, do you mind if Uncle does a piece on this?" He's like, "No, man." So we started talking about it, and I came up with an idea of the music being very kind of dark industrial pop. You know, what he as a couple people have stated, it's kind of like pop Nine Inch Nails.
Okay.
Which is cool. And so I started writing like immediately the music, and then ideas started coming as I was reading more into his short story and pulling it apart. And I was like, this would be the great opportunity because I'm using his story. It's not anything that I concocted to do something completely different. And being at the 30th anniversary and trying to do as much as I can shove into any day that's putting Satori Circus out there, I thought this would be a great moment, you know, it doesn't mean that anything is going to, you know, when I do the 30th anniversary, it's going to be white and black, you know?
Right.
And it'll be white and black for another 30 years until I maybe have a brain fart and go, I want to be pink, you know? But that's where it all came from. I just started thinking about it and wanted it to be more kind of like living art. You know?
Sounds like a positive change. You know, I mean, after 30 years, it's like, you know, sometimes you feel like you've been there, done that.
Well, a lot of people have like, what is going on? I know,
what's my name?
Dirk.
Okay.
Mr. Dirk.
I warned him about this. That's why he screwed it up.
Mr. Dirk. It's a
they call me Mr. Dirk.
Right. So, you know, when he expressed, you know, his like, you know, was like, what's going on? And there's been a few other people have too, because they see the face and they see the name and they don't relate the two together.
Right.
It's like, well, it's not your face, you know, but it's.
Well, it'd be like if Van Halen suddenly didn't have that flying VH logo anymore.
Yeah. Like, it'd be like if David Lee Roth didn't sing for Van Halen.
Oh, wait.
Anymore. Hey.
Hey.
So
that's where it all kind of came from.
Okay. That's a good point, because we're going to backtrack and we're going to start talking about how the process usually goes versus how this one used to be.
Yes.
So anyway, I asked him to send over some music, and he sent me a batch of things I've never heard of before.
So Tori picked the music tonight?
Yes, he did.
I never know the music, so this is like really cool, because I'm always surprised, and well, that's a nice surprise.
What's ego? It's ego.
Okay, so you
it's ego.
Awesome. Hey, it's your fucking show, bro.
So anyway.
The guest in the hangar. Well, we've done shows together. You know that. I've talked about it on the show before. Like when we do Fury Road, I'm the Barker, and he's War Daddy.
War Daddy.
He's my War Daddy.
I am War Daddy.
Okay. Well, anyway, we're going to take a musical break right now. This is the, as I'm going through, I'm like, don't know this one. Oh, I know this one. If you've seen Satori in the background, in the past, same thing.
Yeah, when you're listening to me.
The fuck? By the way, you know how sometimes you tell me after I go off on this weird erudite ramble and you're like, I have no idea what you're talking about?
Right.
I'm you right now with him.
Oh, cool. Just so bump on that, brother.
He's sitting there and he's rattling off all this stuff. And it's like, yeah, like all the artists were together in Midnight in Paris. Is that kind of like what you're talking about?
Damn close, yes.
Totally. Right. Anyway, we're going to take a break right now. And,
it's fun to be on this side of it.
No, it's not.
Yes, it is. It's
no,
very
it's not.
It's good for me.
I'm in command here, I thought. All right. Anyway, so the first one, if you've seen him before, this is the one he does where they kill off all the lights and he's got a couple of little LED flashers that kind of go around, and it's kind of a interesting dark melancholy tune. This is Ramblings to Myself. You want to say anything about what this is about, or just let it speak for itself?
Just listen to the words and what's going on. It comes from a bigger piece called Twilight Barks, which is a very interesting piece in itself.
Okay.
It only done once.
And when we come on back, we're going to go back to the beginning and find out where this all started in the past, back in the 20th century.
It was my parents. They had sex after they got married.
Okay, not that far back. Okay. All right. Anyway, when a man and
you
a woman...
You were the seed that won.
Oh.
Well, we all are. Anybody listening to this, all everybody, right. Give yourselves a pat on the back. Congrats. You won at least once.
Yay.
At least once.
Stadium wave.
That's right. Exactly.
Stadium wiggle.
Right. This is Ramblings to Myself. Ramblings to Myself, yes. Satori Circus. We are Culture Vultures, and this is Podcast Detroit.
Manners are weakness. Thank you, so simple. go to school and how many cars you have and how big is your garage and how big is your house and where you work and do you do aerobics, do you do Pilates, do you do spinning, yoga, what neighborhood you live in and how you dress and where you go to eat and who you bank with and it really doesn't matter.
Ramblings myself, Satori Circus, our guest, very special culture vultures. Now is the part where Satori is going to point on the teddy bear where everything changed. All right, let's go back to the beginning. All right, here. Okay.
Bad touch.
Let's get back to the beginning of the whole thing. Okay. Now you're 3 years old, all right, and you're just probably understanding concepts like God and death. What's your favorite lunch?
My favorite lunch?
Yeah.
Oh, dude, man, it was probably between Fig Newtons and strawberry preserves on hillbilly bread and I don't know.
Good answer. Yeah, anyway.
I think it's just strawberry preserves for sure.
Yeah. All right, let's take it back to
when they made it round.
So, before you were Satori, you were something. What were you before?
Before I was Satori, holy crap. Was in a band from 83 to about 86 called Fugitive Poetry with a dear friend of mine, Rick Martins.
Okay.
And Sonny Viat was our drummer at the time.
And what kind of music?
We were kind of all over the place, man. We fit a category because we were eclectic, weirdo, artsy-fartsy punks.
Okay.
So that's kind of what we did, because...
You had a bunch of hot chicks hanging around, too, didn't you?
No.
No?
That, no.
See, I've always... That was I never other had bands. That. I mean, hot chicks were always the band members' girlfriends and their friends, but it was always like, so, Otto, who are you bringing to the show? Myself?
And my two hands.
My two hands count, right? Yeah, so I always felt like a strange man in a strange world. But anyway, this isn't the Otto show. Please continue.
So, no, we were just, we just did our own stuff.
What would you relate it to if you had this,
if I had to, oh man, it was a cross between, you want to, geez, oh Pete, a little Kinks, a little Alex Harvey. Maybe some Bowie, maybe some Talking Heads, maybe some Nazareth, maybe. I mean, we were all over the place. I mean, okay. But it was like our idea of our music was that whatever happened somewhere else, and we dug it. It didn't have to be, oh, it's rock and roll, it's pop, or it's classical. We just like kind of put it together and it came out through us, so it came out totally different than what you thought.
Okay.
That's not bad.
So
label free.
Yeah. So you do that for a few years, that packs up, then what happened?
Starting in 80, I was 19 and was in a band called the Nasties, and we did rock and roll top 40 cover, did the whole the Ritz and the Papillons.
Yeah, you grind out the circuit, man. How much are you getting paid tonight?
And then was in a couple other bands that did rock and roll covers, and then a couple punk bands as lead singer, and then Fugitive Poetry. And we were together, 3-4 years, and then Rick got really sick with bone cancer. And so we kind of put everything off, and that was like the end of Fugitive Poetry. And then probably about a year prior to him passing away, I started writing on stuff, and he was my sounding board. So it was wonderful because he was living with me at the time, and his fiance and I and Southeast Hospice took care of him like around the clock, different things. I was pretty much like 8 to 7 in the morning because I was there,
Right.
Or 10 to 7 in the morning. So. And then hospice would show up about 10 in the morning, go to 4, and then his fiance would show up and then take him for the rest of the night. So,
how old was he when this was happening?
He passed away July of 88 at 25, just barely 2 months, 25.
Wow. Okay.
And then
cancer sucks.
Yeah.
And by the way, today we're taping. Charles Krauthammer passed away. He announced a couple weeks ago that he was going to be dead in a few weeks, and he lived up to his promises.
Holy crap.
Yep. 68 years old. Anyway, okay, from that down note, so did you have any bands after Fugitive Poetry?
No. Or it rolled right into Satori Circus. And then for a couple years, Satori Circus. And then in 90, I got together with a bunch of friends, and I just wanted to do dorky stuff and ask them, and none of them played anything, so it seemed perfect for me, and we called ourselves the Swingin' Richards.
Okay.
And that's really when I met, or when I started playing other clubs that I had been out of for a long time, like Finney's and Reruns and stuff like that. And we were just a bunch of dorks. It was awesome.
So what was the first Satori thing? Because going through your wildly incomplete bio on your site, SatoriCircus.com.
Thank you.
I'll throw a link in the show notes for episode 179. Don't go there. There's nothing there. In fact, I got this and I sent an email over to Sue Static. I'm going, there's nothing for the last decade here. And then she goes, well, here's a bio. I'm like, there's nothing from the last decade here. And I sent him a note and he sends me stuff. I'm like, nope, this is not helping. I'm going to have to like work from memory. So anyway, what was the beginning? Because I've been around since the beginning. And like, I saw him when he was just a little clown-ish thing, you know, but what, like I said, what sparked the, I'm going to do this thing, and what was that thing initially?
I just started working on stuff, music on a four track, you know, old cassette four track, Tascam or something like that.
I had one.
Yeah. Or Fostex or whatever.
No, I didn't and, have that one.
I just started writing stuff.
Those were the poor kids.
Very reminiscent of what Fugitive Poetry was doing, and I was actually thinking.
Do you play instruments, or you just sing or write?
I would not say I'm a musician, although I can play a few things, you know. It's more, I can't read or write. I can pick up and hold my own.
That, yeah.
So
self-taught.
Like the cassette that came out, Equilibrium, in 90, that was all instruments, you know, keyboards, bass guitar, drum machine that I did.
Okay.
So I'm capable, but right. I'm not that guy.
Okay. You know?
But
you're
for
not
some
Prince.
Oddball, no, or anybody else, man. For some oddball reason, man, I can find something like the piece that we just listened to, Ramblings to Myself, that was all done, you know, through GarageBand and finding loops and then doing some minor music or instruments, you know, real instruments over it. So I figured it out.
So you were just like doing songs?
Yeah, I was just recording stuff, writing stuff.
And where was the performance aspect start layering in?
We, as Fugitive Poetry, we got tired of just performing for people, so we wanted to do something else. So we took that four track and we recorded all our music and then did like these live representations of what we thought the songs were. We did it at Old Miami, Reruns, and 1-9 Yards. And then the drummer left the band at that point, and we, about a year, continued doing that kind of stuff because we really were starting to like dig it, you know? It was all our stuff. We came up with the visuals.
Beats fucking performing. He's never been a stage actor or performer, so he's been a musician, of course.
Who has?
Dirk, you.
I've acted.
Oh, you've acted? Oh.
Yes.
Well, excuse me. This is the first I've ever heard. I'm going to go over there and fuck myself. Please continue your story.
Okay, I will. So, and then that kind of like, it was like all the things that we were thinking of or what Satori Circus became. So when Rick got sick and we put Fugitive Poetry on the shelf, I didn't do anything for about a year, and then I started thinking about it and started wanting to bring all those elements that we had kind of barely touched on for like a year and a half. That's all we did stuff.
Okay.
And then, so I brought that into Satori and was, you know, using him as a sounding board and threw ideas off of him. And, you know, basically I wanted to call it Satori's Circus. But he decided, he goes, it doesn't sound right. Satori Circus sounds much better. And I was like,
this is the part where Justin Timberlake says, you know, no, just Satori Circus. Cleaner.
Yeah. Well, and it worked, you know. It took me a minute. But then, so then I wrote a bunch more material and started to come up with the visuals and the props and the costumes for everything. And it became this, you know,
this thing that you, couldn't Andy put your Hardy, arms around.
It was like an Andy Hardy series. You know, we performed in the garage for the neighborhood, you know.
Now, so are we up to banter now? You know, you want to start with that? Because when I first saw you had a crew, a bunch of people, and you had overhead projectors, and people like were, you know, drawing pictures and erasing them and stuff. And it was very lo-fi, very tactile, very, you know, Andy Hardy in a barn sort of thing.
Yeah,
you know?
It was awesome.
Okay. So, you know, where did that come from?
It came from everything else. Things that I wanted to, you know, things that I was interested in school and, you know, like film, which was Super 8s and costuming and all these different characters and people I saw. And the overhead projectors were just something that kind of came to me as far as like what we used them for in school when we were kids that we weren't supposed to use them for in school as kids.
Right.
So the teacher leaves the room, you're like, yeah, let's put some like snot on it or like watercolors. And
Now you said that in your bio, you said that banter had no real obvious threat. Now, when you assemble a show, you know, walk us through the process. I mean, do you start off with a concept and you start writing songs to it? Do you start writing songs and realize you're subconsciously assembling something as something is emerging and then you start building from there? Where does the music come from? And then, like, where does the visual aspect come in? Does, you know, visual, like, I have this idea for a thing I want to do, but I need a song for it. I have a song. What does that inspire visually? How does that work?
It all works. You know, it's like, I don't sit down to like think about one thing. I think something just that kind of like occurs to me or hits me. And then I just like run with it and think about what I can do with that idea. Banter. Yeah. It was like a full kind of a thread, and the Super 8 film that I made that was really cheesy was the link to all the other pieces.
I don't remember. It was long ago.
Yeah, so, absolutely. It was long ago. It was, yikes, man, 92, 93, somewhere in there. So all the pieces that I had done from 88 up to that point were all kind of just like short vignettes. They were like their own like kind of monster. There was no thread. It just, everything was like linked together.
So they were like a bunch of animated shorts before the movie, and then Banter was the first movie.
Yes.
Hey.
Yeah, there you go.
Analogies. I do them.
So I think that, excuse me, jumping ahead to Childproof. Let's go back. So Banter was the first taste that I started like working on like thematic things, right? Conceptual things, you know, borrowing from Frank Zappa and, you know, the Beatles and, you know, the Rolling Stones and, God, too many people. So, Banter was the first, and then Adam came after Banter, and that was, you know, basically a show about men and their proclivities, whether they were sexual or whether they were political or whether they were just growing pains or whatever. And then from there, it went into, actually from Banter or from Adam, it went into Molt, which was my performance, my MFA thesis.
You have the Joneses here.
Oh, that's right. I totally blanked out.
It's a good thing
you.
I copied your minuscule bio.
You know why? It's because I went immediately to college, and then
I don't remember the Joneses. I'm sure I saw it, but I don't remember it.
It was all based on like, you know, 50s, 60s, and 70s, like pop culture.
Okay.
It
sounds familiar.
Three giant blackboards behind, and I would run around and I would draw the scenery on these blackboards and then go to something else and then erase the blackboard.
That sounds familiar.
Yeah. So that Joneses was completely a great piece. And that was the first piece I did when I was working on my master's. So that's why I totally blanked and I apologize. Cause then the second year, cause I was only in school for two, was Molt, which was my thesis piece.
Okay.
And Molt was basically what it suggests. Molt. It was about, you know, being in one place and all of a sudden something else happens to you and you have to adapt and you're shedding skins, you know, basically your entire life because you have to keep on moving and grooving.
Okay.
Fucking A, man. Couldn't have said that better.
The thing,
I've been molting for like 50 goddamn years.
The thing that,
holy shit.
I think it was Adam. There was a number, and I don't want to, you know, I don't know if step out and like just suddenly like, I didn't want to talk about that. But there was a number I seem to remember. It was like, you were like in a box or something, and during the chorus, someone would be like reaching in, and gosh, I'm describing this so horribly. Never mind. Moving on.
Don't make me think.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember something from 20 years ago. I saw once or twice, you know.
And, so
the thing is, I've seen most of the shows. I can't remember why I would have missed anything other than maybe I either was out of town, something was happening, uh-huh, or whatever. Oh, there was that time we were beefing and doing the diss tracks back and forth, but other than that. We were not. Anyway, yeah, he wouldn't. He's like, Satori would be like, Dirk doesn't like me. Pff, I don't care.
Oh, Dirk. Oh, man, I'll buy you a drink. Let's just talk about it.
Let's talk about it.
Fuck.
Beefing. All right. So, but anyway, the thing is, your home base was 1515 Broadway.
Uh huh.
Downtown. It was a big black box. Well, not big. It was a small black box here. What happened to that?
It was definitely my grounds to do whatever I wanted to.
But what happened to 1515 Broadway?
Recently. Well,
because
a lot of different things. First of all, you know, the white plate is moving back. I don't know if you know that. You know, all the people who moved out
right
in mid-60s, late-60s, they're right. All moving back. Well, their grandchildren are moving back now.
Okay.
And basically the Wolitzer, which is next door, which I thought would never ever be salvaged. They turned it into this like 4 or 5 star hotel. The whole neighborhood is getting just
gentrified to death and yes. Built up.
Yes. And so what ended up happening is that prior to that, there was a lot of like roof pieces falling off.
I had heard about that.
Coming through Chris's place.
Okay.
And that was one thing. And then the next thing was that someone bought the building. And then the next thing. So there was all these things, and then...
So, like, the fix would say one thing led to another, and now there's no 1515 Broadway anymore?
Absolutely. Well, what ended up happening is that someone came in and ended up renting the bottom space.
Where 1515 was.
Where 1515... So Chris...
Well, that's awkward.
...is still above. He still owns the building. They're renting him. Bottom space.
He owned the building.
Yeah, he owned the building. He bought the building in the mid-90s or something.
Oh, so, okay. So I thought he was like, yes, we bought the building and you're out of here, you poor little, thing.
They bought the Wolitzer right next to it, right? Yeah. It's attached. It shares an alley for the most part. So,
That's weird.
It was inevitable.
Chris, okay, and that's why you pretty much moved over the tangent then.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, no, because it was a cool thing.
The one thing that was funny is I think was your last show that you did there, whatever it was about 5-6 years ago or something.
Uh-huh.
You started off, you came out on stage like a half hour before the show started. You're just sitting there. Just sitting out on the stage. And I'm sitting there with Hermione and, looking at you. And you're sitting there, and people are coming in, sitting down, and I leaned over, I go, is this going to be like one of these Warhol things where you're just going to sit there all night, do nothing?
Was that Moses 39?
I don't think so. No, this was, because Moses 39 was 2006 or so.
Yeah.
No, this was like whatever the last thing you did there was.
Oh, yeah. That was part of Umbra and Twilight Barks. There was two short pieces.
Yes. I mean, I think that was where Wafer Thin Mint came from. Oh, that came from Funny as Hell.
Funny
right?
as Hell, yeah.
Okay. So anyway, now we're into the 21st century, and you're finding, the shows are starting to become more explicitly about things.
Yeah.
So how did that transition come?
I don't know. I can't explain it other than. I just latched on to a way of storytelling, like a fuller piece,
But how is that? What is the genesis of that? I mean, okay, let's say you're like, okay, it's time to do a new show.
Uh-huh.
What's your process? Who are your collaborators? How does this work?
Oh, man, I don't even think about that stuff. I think about Brian Dambacher because Brian and Tim Solomon, two dear friends. One is a lot of more music than the other one is, and the other one's a lot more stage and lighting and sound and stagecraft and all that kind of stuff.
Which is which?
So, Tim Solomon comes from music.
Okay.
Playing his whole life. He has got a mini studio. Actually, it's quite a large studio in his basement, and that's where I do a good amount of my recording.
Okay.
Brian Dambacher is one of the Dambacher brothers I've known and worked with since about 93, 94. And Brian comes from stagecraft, building, construction, lighting, sound for theater.
Right.
And
okay. So is it like a just the thing is that I'm trying to see if it, is this like a holistic thing where is everybody's kind of like bouncing ideas or what's the flow? I mean, obviously you're the guy,
well,
but then then you say I have an idea for this, and then where does it go from there?
Basically, I have an idea for this, and like for Stroke, I said, hey, I'm going to use my nephew's piece. We're going to do this. We're going to do that. I got some ideas. I'll start jotting them down, and then we kind of like get together, and you know, I throw ideas off to them, and then the next thing develops into the next thing, and the next thing, and then it snowballs.
Okay.
Like, for this piece, Stroke, I have three friends from Port Huron that I've performed with, two of them, but they've been musicians in bands that have been behind me, Funny as Hell, up in Port Huron at Tangent, 63 Minutes of Random Balance at the DIA.
This is the Haberdasher, right?
Yes.
Okay, and what are they about?
The Haberdasher is, there are four guys, and the Haberdasher is this gentleman who kind of has the ability to...
make hats?
Well, he has a way of teleporting into different time zones, into different times completely, into different countries. So their music is like all over the place. It's kind of non-based in any one type of genre.
Oh,
and they, okay. And the stories are through the voice of the Haberdasher. You know, I went to Japan and I saw this and blah, blah, blah. And the song is very kind of, interesting, you know,
okay.
Or he was, you know, he went to this one place and it's more kind of hardcore. He went to this place and it's sugar pop, or he went to this place and it's like funk, or he went to this place. So that's how.
So it seems like a concept theatrical music thing.
Yeah. Huh. It's really cool.
It's going to be different.
Yeah. Mm. So,
you can hear that on June 29th at Tangent Gallery.
Yes. Doors at 8:00. But as far as process, I usually come up with some idea, you know, and then start beating it to death before I like even invite anybody in, you know, like for instance, Stroke. I told the friends, Brian and Tim, yeah, I'm going to be doing this, blah, 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 you know, from Antonio. And then like a month later, I had like six pieces that I wrote, you know, in Garage, and, you know, basically performed it to them. And they were like, wow, okay, cool. And I just kept on going. So, they're sounding boards in the beginning, and then we kind of like open it up for interpretation, and I get, you know, feedback from them because they know different things that I completely don't know.
Okay.
And we go from there, and it becomes a, you know, kind of a, you know, a bigger group than just one guy.
Okay.
And I like that. Especially like with the performers, you know, I have an idea. This is what it's going to be. What do you think? Well, I think this, 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 and that. Cool. Let's do it. You know, I'm not a director, you know, I'm more of a like collaborator. So like with
the
people,
lead collaborator.
Well, you know,
the name on the letterhead.
It depends, you know? Yeah. But you know,
if everyone's joining, I mean, does it matter whose name is the biggest or.
Yeah. But the thing is someone's got to make the calls as to what actually ends up on the stage.
That's called a director.
So right. He's a director.
Well,
you know, director of collaboration.
I just try to stay away from that because it's just too.
Yeah.
Ringmaster.
Heavy-handed.
And too hierarchical.
And I like people being able to interpret what's going on.
Right.
And have them do their thing 100% as opposed to...
flow.
Yeah. As opposed to like, no, I don't want that. I want this. Okay.
Right.
And then having them try to fight to find it or
giving
60%, you know?
Exactly.
So I like the collaboration. And they know. They know where they can't go and when we can't go. Oh, yeah, I can't go over here? Okay. I'm cool.
Okay. Yeah, because so the shows have become more like in 2007 you did Funny as Hell as the first time, and that was out at Meadowbrook. And that was, you know, where really the production started getting more involved.
Elaborate, yes, absolutely.
So how does that work out?
It was an opportunity. It was an opportunity to use every bell and whistle that was at my disposal.
Okay.
And that was working for the university, you know, Meadowbrook, Oakland University. And I was like...
at Felix's big bag.
I was blown away at the opportunity. So I just took it. I had no idea where I was going to go. Now, was I totally invested in it? I don't know. You know, some of it was a little odd to me because I hadn't been catered to in that style. Like, you got this, 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 you got this. All I want is that. well, you got that, and you got this, and you got this, and you got, you know, so it's kind of overwhelming, mm-hmm. you know, from where I came from, using...
Since you've been so used to the Andy Hardy put on a show on the bar with, yeah. with the stolen overhead projectors from the school.
Exactly.
Now, suddenly, you're in a professional theater environment right. with actual theater tools, not repurposed overhead projectors for lights, but lights, yeah. you know, and actual cans, cars, you know, and stuff like
that. That was interesting to me, and it freaked me out a little bit. You
okay.
know?
Hi, I'm Steve. I'm your stage technician.
What?
You're my what?
Yeah.
What? Yeah. Hi, I'm Hal. I'm your lighting guy. What? I have a lighting guy?
Yeah, exactly. Because, you know, that was so so unfamiliar to
right,
me.
Right, right.
And, you know, ever since then, it's gone either way. You know, either I've had that opportunity to, like, blow it out, or I've been back to square one where I was in 1988.
But
and it's
really
totally
care
cool.
either way.
I love it.
The show's
you know?
The thing. You know, it's trite and
it's the people, you know,
exactly.
It's the people on stage. It doesn't have to be, it could be something from 1988 or it could be something from 2007, but it's the people that like kind of carry it.
Now, one of the things that I mentioned in passing before, and we were talking before we started recording, is just the fact that over the years, though, you know, you would change up the material, you know, from show after show. But now you've started to build, you know, what could be called a greatest hits collection of songs. You know, basically, if you're doing a bit like with Whiz Bang, or if you're doing, you know, three or four songs at some other thing, one of your little appearances, not an actual show, you know, you're going to break out, you know, These Are My Friends, where you're singing as a school kid with paper plates with faces on them. And,
right.
you know, These Are My Friends. You're going to do... Burlesque, which is a drag piece you do.
Mm-hmm.
You do, what's the French guy thing?
Oh, Tender Rogue Tango.
Okay. And you do that where you ride an inflatable doll like a racehorse. And I got a really great picture of you. I'm going to put that in the show notes. It should be the cover image of that one. So anyway, but you have these ones that you just kind of break out.
Mm-hmm.
From Funny as Hell, there's the Mr. Creosote song, you know, Wafer Thin Mint, I believe it's called.
Yes.
You know, which is like a Tom Waits song, but, you know, everybody gets the reference. Now, that's almost as mainstream referential as I can think of that you've done. That was that deliberate or
absolutely
know,
it was a homage to him. It was the when I heard the music and I had these, you know, half written words, I was like, a lot of that show came together like that. It was like musical pieces that Dave Dambacher had like put together, and he goes, what do you think of this? And I'd be listening, I'm like, wait a second, and I'd like go grab some words that I had been jotting down. I was like, keep on going, and that's how we kind of collaborated with that. I was like, oh dude, this is it. And you know, Wafer Thin Mint just had that Tom Waits or...
Yeah, I wish you'd sent me that. I've been like,
Leonard
oh, this Cohen. Is so great.
Well, the unfortunate thing about that is it's not all recorded.
Okay.
Yeah. So.
And that, and also, there was one in one of your recent shows a few years ago, the one that you guys do with all the lights on stands, the desk lamps.
Yes.
You know, it's like kind of the Pixar orchestra chorus kick line.
Yeah.
And it has like this really heavy, grindy guitar thing. In fact, I asked you, like, are you going to release that? That's really great. I would like to get a recording of that. And you were like, uh-huh, absolutely. And then, you know, here we are a few years later, nothing's happened.
Yeah.
No. Poems, he's still waiting.
That's from poems we tell ourselves.
Well, okay.
I'll get you some USBs, I promise. In the next couple weeks.
Yeah. Well, the shows will be over by then. We're going to have use the songs that you sent. So, anyhow.
Give them to me. I'll make sure he gets them.
And actually, we'll play them in a future episode, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's what I mean.
Yeah.
We are what we are.
We are what we are.
That's the piece.
Okay. Want to take another break right now, and then we'll move on, and we'll talk about some other stuff as we move into the later things, your anniversary shows, your big shindigs, and also just kind of figure out, like, where does it all mean? Where's it all going? And
what?
We all what?
When you say what, now where does it all go and where does it all mean?
I have no idea what's going on.
What?
What
does it all mean?
What do you mean? All right. Well, fortunately, we have Otto here to correct me.
Otto correct. That's right.
All right. This
yes,
song I selected for our next thing is called Blind Searching in a Circle. What's this one about?
You'll have to just listen.
I like that.
You're breaking Larry King here. You know?
No build up. Play the fucking song. We're the Culture Vultures. This is Podcast Detroit.
Thank you.
smoking, wasting roads of searing brick. There's a noise, a cry like a voice that pierces the wits. There's a home of glass that moans a tune so thick it sticks. There's a path that verges on collapse. No map can never make you rich. Yeah. Yeah.
Good vinyl scratchy sounds for you Third Man fans down there. Yes, that was Blind Searching in a Circle by Satori Circus, our guest tonight on Culture Vultures on Podcast Detroit and everywhere else.
That was a game effort to go deep like Otto, but you just can't go as deep as I can, Derek.
No, I can't, but we're going to dig even deeper in Satori here. Getting up into the recent years, and the show is getting bigger and bigger, and the venues are getting bigger and bigger. Was it your 25th anniversary as the DIA?
Yeah.
What was that about? How'd that come about?
I was like, you know, it's my 25th anniversary. I'm going to do something. We're going to write all new material. It's going to be a hark back to, you know, 1988, 90, whatever it was. And I told, again, Brian, I was like, dude, I'm just going to call them up. I'm just going to ask them. I'm going to like fudge around and try to talk to somebody. And one thing led to another name, another department. And then I ended up talking with, Larry Baranski at the DIA, and they were definitely all for it. So it was really cool to have that opportunity. So
right.
they were amazing to us, you know, honestly. So, it was just knock on the door, man.
So, how many people were at those shows? Were they basically sold out, you know?
Well, see, the whole thing is that they were free.
They were free.
Yeah.
But it was a freaking snowstorm.
Yes.
Okay.
And people still were there.
Oh, yeah. I mean, well, yep. we weren't going to miss it, but holy crap, you know? Let's put it this way. If it wasn't such a big deal, we would have stayed home. But, you know, we had to be there for you. You know?
Thanks, man. Thanks.
And, well, no, it also, I remember Dixon, Dixon's violin. He was there in this big fur coat. I'm like, hey, Macklemore, you know, and I think he still hasn't forgiven me for that one, but he looked like Macklemore. What can I say? You know, own it.
Dirk, you are the king of tact.
Yeah.
On Tact Mountain, you rule the fortress of good intentions.
Yeah, sure. Why not? So, anyhow, so you do this big, huge, free, sold out show.
Yeah.
Why did it not seem to convert to people coming to the regular shows? Not to kneecap you here, but it's like I've always been baffled for so long, and for the quality of what you're doing, you always seem to be just like kind of, you know, struggling to get people down. What is preventing you from crossing over and blowing up?
Geez, that's a good question.
I mean, it's the same question I asked, like, you know, why are we not, you know, next to, you know, Twit on, you know, and Nerdist podcast, you know, because, you know, it's just not working out. But
I don't know. I don't have a real answer for it other than I've stayed here and I've been here for a while, you know, in Detroit. It's always been my muse, but last couple of years, things have like kind of shifted for me.
Okay.
It's the muse is changing. And as we can see in Detroit, it's changing, you know, it's not the place that I was born into. I grew up in, you know, it's completely changing for me. So it's becoming different, and not that I can't work with that or I can't live here. It's just different, you know?
How do you mean? Is it like, you know, what is it? It's like the
when we were kids, we could go anywhere and park anywhere and find things, and it would be $1, $2, $5 was like, whoa, okay,
right.
It better be awesome. Now it's like 30, 40,
right.
You know, $50,
right.
You know.
Buy your tickets on Eekspace because $40 instead of $50 at the door is always a deal.
The thing is that you would consider. Oh, sorry.
I was blocked,
fondling the
cock
fondling
blocked
the bell.
My bell ring. God damn it! I'm trying to sell something over here, Dark.
The thing is that, you know, and this is something in the very beginning. You know, back in the 90s when I first started seeing you, I would say to Hermione, I'm like, you know, if he was in New York, he'd be like the biggest damn thing ever. But he's in Detroit. And for some reason, that's not making him the biggest thing ever. And is it because it's too, I mean, is it because there's a, the thing is that Detroit is a very large metropolitan area. Okay. Everyone tries to boil it down to being just the ghetto or just the garage scene or just the techno thing or just the rap or just the this and that. The fact that we have all these things that they can try to boil it down to indicates there's a whole bunch of different things going on. But you think there would be more audience for what you're doing, or is it so unique that, I mean, seriously, is there anybody else in town or in the state that's doing anything even remotely similar to what you're doing?
I don't know.
I mean, the haberdasher, but the thing is, that sounds like more of like a thematic music thing, not a performance art, theatrical. I mean, when I was prepping up for the interview, I'm thinking to myself, it's like, wait a minute. You know, the thing is, I've seen his shows. I've seen almost all of his shows for a quarter of a century. I don't know if I could say what it's about. I don't know if it's because I'm not paying attention or if it's flying over my head.
Like, I don't think
all those French names you're talking about earlier.
Yeah. Well, you know what? It turned out to being so many things that I enjoyed into one thing.
Okay.
And I think it's hard for people to get a lot thrown at them in trying to figure out where it fits. Oh, he's got a great voice. Oh, look at the light. Oh, that costume's awesome. Oh man, he was playing this 2-year-old baby and he nailed it. So it's all over the place.
Speaking of the 2-year-old baby, let's talk about America's Got Talent for a quick second.
Geez.
What was that about?
It was a gas, man. They invited me.
They contacted you to go audition?
I did not send them anything, nothing. And I don't know how it happened. Someone called me one day and said, yeah, my name is, I don't know, Bob. And I'm calling from America's Got Talent. I go, yeah, right, man. Right. And I hung up the phone, you know, because I don't know the number, and, you know,
okay,
fuck you, phone
dude.
Rings
I
again.
For working an hour.
And it's like, yeah, this is Bob from America's Got Talent.
For real?
Okay. I'm sorry, dude. I got disconnected. What's up? And he's like going on and on, and I was like, well, okay, obviously they saw a piece online, and it was burlesque.
Okay.
And they're like, yeah, we would love for you to come to Chicago and blah, 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 and audition and this, that. I'm like, well, first off, let me ask you a question. Is this is a family show, right? America's Got Talent. And I'd never watched it. So, but I said, you know, I made it like, this isn't, you know, a family show, right?
Right.
And he's like, yeah. I'm like, did you watch the entire piece? And he's like,
yeah.
But we watched the first few minutes. I'm like,
no, no. Did like, you watch the entire piece?
Yeah. You know what?
Did you watch the part where I took off the dress and I have pasties on and I'm twirling them?
Yeah. Buddy, you need to go back and look at that entire piece on YouTube. And we can go from there. So you got my number. So just give me a call back, okay? Next day he calls me. He goes,
oh,
yeah.
we're going to go in a different direction.
Can you not do that part? I'm like, no, I absolutely cannot do that part. I mean, that part is part of the show. So
exactly.
No.
You know, I could do another number, but I cannot not do that part.
I will not castrate my baby.
Pick another part. And they went through and they couldn't find anything. I'm like, well, I got this piece. It's a baby.
Okay,
right?
Here's the thing, because this is way, because I heard, when I heard that, now you weren't, did you like do it, but you weren't allowed to say that you were on until it aired? Is that
on game shows? Yeah.
Or did you say, I'm off doing this, it'll air a later date?
No, you weren't supposed to talk at all. Okay, that was contractual.
It's like, yeah, well,
full disclosure.
We never ran the interview because it was so long and I never had a chance to cut it down, but. I have a friend and her daughter were contestants on The Amazing Race.
Mm-hmm.
And I did an interview, like a hour long interview. And the thing is that they wanted to do it where they would have a network minder with me monitoring the call. I'm like, that's not the way we record this stuff and whatnot. I says, well, we want to hear it before you air. I'm like, sure, absolutely. And obviously they didn't want someone to spoil what the ending was going to be.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
And the thing is they were still on the show when I did it and they got voted off, like, or they screwed up and finished last the following week after I did it, or maybe they had already been off the show and I was talking about that, but it was very fascinating. But anyway, I sent it off and they're like, that's too long. We're not going to listen to it. You can't run it. I'm like, okay. The thing is, it's been a few years later. I might still, chop it up and put it out. But the whole thing was though, it's just like when you're on Jeopardy, you're not allowed to say that. Yeah. I was on for 43 days or something like that. You can't tell whether you won or not.
Right.
And,
right.
And in their case, I didn't even put them on the spot. Saying, so do you know who won? I never watched the show all the way through. And all the contestants are at the end, at the finish line for the final winner. But what was interesting, though, is that they did tell me that after when people get eliminated, they go off to basically some unknown location, like Loser Island, I dubbed it, where they would just basically have to sit there and wait for other losers to come in. And then they like moved to another loser location and then they all got to go back to the finish. So they didn't even know who was going to win until they got to the very ending.
Okay.
So anyhow, so the thing is, I had heard that you're going to be on, and then they didn't do a full feature. They kind of like did a little quick edit job of your bit.
Yeah.
And then I saw you did the baby thing. I'm like, what the hell did he do that for? So how'd you choose that? Or just,
I figured if I'm gonna go up there, man, I'm gonna do something that's like they've never seen before. Plus the piece was written about my dad and I wanted to bring my dad there.
Okay. Sure. The way it aired though, it looked like,
it was terrible.
It looked like you're an idiot dressed as a baby.
No, it was completely terrible. I was complete fodder.
Okay.
For the rejects. One, I was in Milwaukee, not New York. Okay. And that's where they showed my clip. It was all from the New York scene. And if you watch it, it goes into this sideshow carnival act from New York.
Uh-huh.
And they got booed immediately, just like I did. There were so many different things, man. First of all, they wouldn't let me interview with my makeup on. Second of all, I had to do this and I had to do that. I was in the theater for like 10 hours. They treated me like a king. I got per diem. They flew me out there, the whole nine yards. Piers Morgan wasn't even there.
Really?
He was flying in from New York. It was terrible weather.
Okay.
And they held him up at O'Hara. They would not allow him to take off. So when they ran the show, because they couldn't postpone it, they had Mrs. Osborne.
Sharon Osborne.
Sharon Osborne.
Howie Mandel.
Thank you, Howie Mandel. And a cutout that was Piers Morgan.
Okay.
In the seat.
Behind the scenes of how the sausage
is
made.
Cardboard Piers Morgan.
they seem
a little stiff.
Yeah. They
British
have so many like cameramen. There's like your handler. I was supposed to get a sound check, never got a sound check. When I went up on stage, I couldn't even hear. When I started singing, nobody could hear me sing.
Wow.
The audience was like going, what's going on?
So there's this weird guy dressed as a baby up there that you can't hear singing.
I walk out on stage and everybody's like, what? And they're all like yelling, screaming. And then Howie wants to like find out a little bit more about what the piece is. I'm like, well, this is from a bigger piece I did. It's based on my dad's life. Oh, so this is serious. I'm like, well, it is serious, but there's like some black humor in it. Black humor? What do you mean by black humor? I'm like, it's funny.
Your
it's
mama's
not funny.
So fat. No.
You know, so the whole nine yards. So they go, are you ready to go? I'm like, yeah, sure. Why? I'm ready to go. So I sit, kneel down, and I get into position, and I turn my head, and I put marmalade in my mouth, because I don't know if you're familiar with the piece, but
I vaguely
it's a baby,
it.
Right?
Yeah.
So he regurgitates.
Okay.
You know, he's got the rattler, and he's like, ah! And he goes, right before he starts singing, he was like, I went, bleh! All over the stage. They had no idea. The audience shit their pants. All I saw was X.
Nice.
I start singing. I can't hear myself in the monitors. I'm watching them while I'm singing. They're going. They can't hear. And they just went, screw it. And they canned me. And I was like, oh, cool. You know, whatever. And they're like.
Still got paid though, right?
Absolutely.
And get on TV.
Yeah, got on TV for. But you know, when we watched the Milwaukee segment, it was like I wasn't on. I was like, oh, I guess I was cut. So I didn't even think about it. Months went on. I don't give a crap, you know.
Right.
Months
right.
go on. I'm driving from up north, and I get a phone call from my nephew, and he goes, "Hey, Unc, you on America's Got Talent, right?" I'm like, "Yeah." And that was like what 5-6 months ago. I was supposed to be on the air a long time ago. And he goes, "We just watched you walk across the stage." I'm like, you're kidding me. He goes, no. And it's in New York. I'm like, well, that's wrong. I go, film it for me. He goes, yeah, sure. So
nice.
That's how I found out and how I saw myself. Otherwise, I would have never known. And I don't even care, man.
Satori's
it was an opportunity.
Got talent.
That was a performance
title.
In itself.
Title. Done.
Done.
Wow. I think it needs a horn. It needs a horn over there.
Oh, for your treatment?
Yes,
oh, fuck.
Yes.
Okay. Sure.
Fuck my face.
Not righteous.
So, all right, as we moved on now, so now we're into the recent things that you're doing the big thing. And but you're cool with the fact that for some reason is you're just not becoming Laurie Anderson Detroit edition, you know?
I don't mind it, man. You know what? The thing is I've had the opportunity and I've been grateful for it and I've been blessed that I've had the opportunity to perform with amazing folks. I've been on big stages, I've been on small stages. I like small stages. I mean, big stages are grand too, but small stages, man, you can see people like burp. You can see the sweat. You can see them cringe. You can see everything. And for me, that's part of my show.
Yeah. What was the show you did a couple of years ago at Tangent where the audience was in the middle of the floor? It wasn't a stage thing. It was sideways. And then all of a sudden, like after the beginning of the thing, it dropped. Plastics down the side of the screen, and basically the audience was trapped in there.
Yeah,
because people were trying to like scooch their chairs out, and someone's like, "No, you got to keep them inside." And I was kind of like, "What's this about?" You know. Then all of a sudden, boom, you drop the thing.
Yeah, the drops, kabuki drops. Yeah, it was called Deboyanini, and it Deboyanini is a Ojibwe.
Okay.
Term that means man searching, or I forget now, but it's like man searching or searching for himself. Mm-hmm. And it just fit very eloquently with Satori Circus. You know,
okay.
Satori being pure illumination, pure truth, searching, looking for enlightenment, right? And the piece itself was about family. And a lot of the pieces were borrowed from other shows that kind of fit. And then I just became the narrator. I didn't want to do anything. I wanted to drink and like talk to the audience and sing to the audience and let everybody else act out what was happening.
Well, what was interesting is that it was the first show. It was two nights, and the first night was my birthday. So you were singing happy birthday and stole a lot and the whole thing, you know? And then what was interesting though is because then we came back the second night and I knew what the show was going to be. Oh, and you had me read something too.
Yeah.
You had people reading poems and stuff in the audience. Well, anyway, the second night though, I was sitting in front. First night I was up in the front. Second night I was sitting in the back because it's, you know, I'd seen the show and some other people get the front seats. And you do a bit where you go ring, ring, and there's a phone out in the crowd. And people the first night, but there was no one sitting there the second night. And you pick it up and you start. So anyway, I got up and I go like, I'll get it. And I walk up to through the crowd and I do it. And the thing is Bob Gonna Kill Somebody Koski was with us on that second show. And he was like, afterwards, he was like, wow, I didn't know Dirk was going to be in the show. You know, how did you guys rehearse that? I'm like, that was totally improv. I basically, there was no one answering the phone. I knew what the bit was going to be. So I just went up there and did the bit.
That was perfect. It was absolutely perfect.
Now, here's the thing, though. You're up there, and you see me like, oh, hell, he's getting up and he's walking out here.
That's what most people think. Oh, my God, it's coming towards me.
Yeah.
It's coming right at us! Bang! Charlie's in the trees!
So, picked the wrong week to quit sniffing glue.
I thought it went well. So
I did too, man. I was like, oh, this is going to be awesome. Pete's coming up.
I've always said, and there he does it again. Because,
oh, Dirk.
You know,
Dirk's coming up!
Dirk's coming up.
I got your back.
I got to let you know.
He's got to let it go.
Alrighty.
Dirk,
coming. So you have your new makeup stroke show coming up.
Uh-huh.
Makeup free stroke show.
No, it's different makeup. He's wearing
$10
makeup.
Make you holla.
So anyway,
that's me coming up in the parking lot.
And you've got your 30th anniversary coming up. So what do you got planned for that? What's the big shindig?
It's going to be going back.
Tangent or DIA?
It'll be at Tangent, September 28th and 29th. So two nights. And I got a bunch of things.
Same show both nights or
yeah,
mixing
up? It'll probably be same show both nights just because I don't want, you know, it's 30 years of going through a lot of stuff, man.
So this will be the super greatest hit show, right?
Yeah. So super fantastic.
Awesome.
So now, unlike the 25th anniversary where you wrote up a new show, this is going to be basically the complete career retrospective.
Yeah, I'm going to dig back to like 88 to probably up about 96.
Okay.
You know? Because those are pieces I have not performed in that.
Yeah.
It's been pretty cool. So I got some things up my sleeve. In the interim, I got tons of stuff that's like that I've been working on and doing, and I'm working on a mural on the side of Tangent.
Okay.
Gallery with a dear friend of mine, Marcus Concernicus. In doing that, I'll be working with a young budding performance artist from Royal Oak, John Skymore.
Okay.
He's 11 years old.
What?
Yeah.
He's 11?
Yeah, I'm sorry,
Holy
man, but
sheep shit.
His whole idea and identity, he's a badass. So
okay.
I'm very pumped about that.
Nice.
I have, I'll be doing some MC work in Vegas and LA with Sketch Battle, Middlecott Sketch Battle, which I've been doing for about 4 or 5 years now. It started at Tangent and it's kind of blossomed.
Which is?
Nice. It's a group of individuals that put together the Sketch Battle and it is
what
part of
is
automotive.
The Sketch
Battle? It's part of automotive. So they tie into like the automotive show. Okay. So the car show.
Okay. Are they drawing like sketches?
Yeah. Let me get there.
Or is this like sketch comedy?
No, let me get there.
It's drawing about sketch comedy.
So they're young artists. They're either out of like, you know, automotive design, automotive illustration from like CCS or whatever city they're in. And so they draw from that lot and they also go for the young professionals and a few seasoned professionals. So you have probably about 20, 25 contestants. They sit at a long row of tables. There's three rounds. They're a half hour each round. They give you specific directions for that round. Mm-hmm. You sketch. You have 30 minutes, and they throw it up on the board, and it's a lot of the guys who are reviewing it and judging it are basically big wigs in the automotive industry, you know, whether it's corporation or whether it's, you know, illustration, design, whatever. Mm-hmm. And so then it boils down to like four or five at the end. And typically they walk away with a nice check.
Nice.
Know? Yeah. So that's been going on for a while. It started at Tangent and they've managed to get into LA and Vegas and I'll be doing that. I'll be in New York beginning of August. Doing basically a week run of shows. Bizarre Bar in Brooklyn, Slipper Room in Manhattan, and then I get a chance to do Coney. So I'm pretty pumped about doing Coney at 57.
Nice.
I was like, I know how old you are. How
step right up. Yeah. You're gonna be on the Broadway.
So the circus finally
hits the real freak show. The freak show ain't out here, it's right in there.
He's gonna be right across from the F Society arcade.
Yeah, so I'm doing as much as I possibly can for my 30th anniversary.
Okay.
But
you're basically doing Satori shows, but are you doing like just basically a strip down one person, are you bringing people?
Just going to be me. I managed to make connections through dear friends of mine, the Squidling Brothers, who perform there all the time in New York, and they opened doors for me. So I could stick my foot in, and people are digging it. So,
dude, you don't have to stick your foot in my door. It's always open for
Thank you.
And that's how he gets there.
One more thing.
Just meet like-minded freaks like yourself.
One more thing.
Here's to us.
One more thing. This is like the theater tech nerd of myself. How has the way you produce your shows and create your stuff changed in the last 30 years? Because you talked about demoing stuff on a cassette 4-track. Okay. Now you work in GarageBand. Now, basically, you have a recording studio and a laptop that you can take anywhere and you can get incredible sounding productions for just a few hundred bucks in software and instruments and just creativity.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things I've noticed is that, especially like the last 5 years ago, basically all the little LED light things have allowed you to put stuff into your costumes or put them on the stage, little tap lights. And it's all really lo-fi stuff. Like you basically raid a dollar store and you stitch it into your costumes and stuff like this. But how has that changed your creative process as, now it's like, I can do this now.
I still think in that low-tech area, because one, it was always an expense and always how could I stretch my imagination? And when Radio Shack was about, we'd go there or, using Christmas lights from Frank's Nursery, or Frank's Trim and having a bunch of extension cords all over the stage. But I still think that. I think I like low-tech stuff. It's kind of you can do some amazing things with it. And when you are successful in doing those little things, like Momentchance with the air duct tubes.
Exactly.
That stuff blows people's minds, and you're like, this is
sometimes
awesome.
Simple is best. Yeah. Sometimes, and minimalist, but not minimalist. It's expanding on a minimalist idea that, you're not even focused on the minimalist aspect of it. You're just focused on the awesomeness or...
And that's, going back to the small crowds. They see that, I dig that kind of thing.
The word of mouth is always good.
Big spaces, I don't know how. I mean, it'd be intimidating and to think that big. And it'd be fun, too, to think that big.
Yeah, but it would be an entirely different, your end, if you were to play, the larger,
the Celine Dion theater, you'd need video cameras and it'd be a different experience.
Yeah.
But you play to the room. So, cozy room.
I would be running around.
Yeah.
I would be like, I need a cordless I need to go way the hell out there by the exit doors and see those people.
Didn't you in the DIA shows, didn't you do some stuff in the crowd?
Oh, yeah. We ran through the crowd with cap guns shooting each other.
Ah, yes.
Climbing all over.
We
were like kids,
good.
Right? We were like, 10-year-old kids having cap gun fights. Going, no way, mom, you shot me.
I prefer crowd interaction, actually. As I get my later years, when I'm doing a show, I love it when they're like, okay, Otto, we need you to go out in the crowd and make stuff happen. And I'm like, oh my God, I had a challenge here. It's like, fuck. It writes itself.
Yeah.
I prefer to have my admirers at arm's reach or arm's distance. Like, just stay back there. Like Evita Peron. Okay.
I want to touch. I want to smell my audience.
I'm up in the balcony with the sniper rifle.
I want them to
it's like, no, you're out of control
shoes.
Down there.
Come on, show me the love.
If you were to, and this is going to lead us into the quiz in a moment here. If you were to, have to say, these are the pieces that summarize the Satori experience. Pick, one, two, three. What are the songs? What are the numbers? What's the thing that you're like, okay, you know, obviously not the baby thing on America's Got Talent, you know, but, or if you want, but what would you say? I mean, is it the ones that you bring, like when you do your greatest hits things, you always do, these are my friends, these are, you know, Wafer Thin Mint. You do those because they're just kind of like, you know, the hit singles that stand alone from the shows that they came from. Okay. But what do you do, you know, what would you say, either something known or something arcane? What would you say? These are the things that, you know, some of
your top three go.
That's
dead air.
Yeah, no, I know it's dead
top
air.
Top three,
I
mean, on top of your head.
I didn't send this one. I just thought of it.
You know, I would have to go back to quite a few different pieces from the early days.
Okay, so number three is quite a few pieces.
I would say Killer is definitely a classic staple. Behind Every Great Man is a Woman Equally as Great. That was a great one.
I know what Killer is. I don't know what the other one is.
No, the other one was, I'm standing on milk crates and I had a little kind of like a sash on that looked like I was a Roman sculpture, and I had one flashlight in my hand, and behind me was a Super 8 projection, you know, of hands flying with the shadow casted. It was about the relationship and
beautiful.
I was creating all these, like, you know, I would sing and just hold a pose and flex and make it look like I was a statue.
Okay.
And that's one of my favorite pieces. I would say Much Content, which was the glow stick, where I come out on stage, I'm in my dance belt and I'm putting on a costume and
right.
I put the headgear on and I'm like sitting there and I'm adjusting myself and the lights are like beating on me, and all of a sudden I jump up in the air and the lights go out and everything's glowing.
Okay.
The glow stick one, Much Content. Those are like real staples for me.
Nice.
You know, that I remember.
Not a bad way to go. Got him speechless because he's like scrambling furiously to get all this.
No, I'm just going to try to get to the end of the thing here. I appreciate.
Nice recovery.
What's the? Is there anything that you've done where you're like, okay, that was a very terrible idea?
Oh my God, are you kidding me? Yeah, the music.
Everything
was
else
great.
I just didn't mention.
The visuals suck. Oh, the music was great. Oh, the visuals. Yeah. There's a lot of them.
Okay.
Yeah, it's just happens.
Is there one thing that we can count on that will not be at the 30th anniversary show?
Oh, yeah, there was this one piece I did that I thought was really kind of cool, and I had one side of my costume was man's pants, and the other side was a dress. And getting
I remember
in,
this. I
yeah,
think.
Getting in and out of it was a pain in the ass. And I had a wig, and a friend of mine cut the one side of it short, and the other side was long, and it was terrible. But, like, 30 seconds of it was absolute beauty. And that's like,
unfortunately, it was another 5 minute bit.
Cheers. And it was, hey, ring that bell
on that.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly what it's gonna be.
Oh God.
All right, talk about on the same way.
Okay, well,
yeah.
We've all been there.
Yes, you know? We
have. It's like, this was a good commercial. Unfortunately, it was a feature film. We had almost a trailer's worth of good material. All right, now we're going to do a thing that we haven't done in a long time because we haven't any musical theme guests. This is called the Deep Thoughts Musicians Quiz Game. Yeah. Okay,
easy for you to say.
No, it's not. And
would you rather a deep auto introduction?
Nah.
Deep Thoughts Music Trivia Game.
That's not what it's called. Anyway, as usual, better. As Letterman would say, please, no wagering. All right, these are some questions so we can get beyond the usual. Inspiration. All right, first question here is, when did you realize that you had enough aptitude at music to become a creator and not just a player?
I don't think I realized anything. I just wanted to do it, so I did it, you know.
If you could sing or play like anyone, who would it be and why?
Sing or play, it's kind of tricky. I would have to go to, you know, people that I grew up admiring. So David Bowie being one, just for the fact that he could play umpteen million different things.
So to play David Bowie, who would you sing like? Or sing and play like David
Bowie?
Oh,
if sing and play.
Sing and play.
Or play. Okay. It's whether you're a singer or a player, you know?
Right.
Okay. I'm a minor player, and I would like to play like people of his caliber. Right?
Okay.
But singing, there's many of them, you know? I mean, there's the Tom Waits and the Prince and the David Bowie. I mean, just because of the
it sounds like Bill Cosby, the Tom Waits and the Prince and the David Bowie.
What about the Joe Cocker and the Elvis Presley? What about the Nat King Cole?
Okay, Nat King Cole is completely different, right? All right?
Right.
As far as the other two that you mentioned, they sang great and they did their thing great, but my thing is flexibility.
Right.
And not Freddie Mercury had a lot of great flexibility, but in my mind, David Bowie is the one that kind of did a lot of different things. And if you listen to, you know, from the beginning when he was like yelling and screaming and rock and roll and his voice was higher to like the Heathen album where mm-hmm. it's all of a sudden it's sultry and smoky. I dig that, man. You know, I dig, yeah. I dig being able to have a range. And you guys know, you guys have seen my shows. I try to do things differently. I try to sing here, up here. I try to sing down there.
I try to sing scratchy. You have a very distinctive, as people may have heard on the show, on the music we've played so far, you have a very high, kind of keening voice.
Yeah, I don't
you
know where
that's, that,
yeah.
that's well, just basically, it's a really high tenor. It's very kind of sharp, and it's very unique.
Nasally. it's cool, man. It's done me justice. I can't change. You know,
you sing like you sing. Yeah, what can you do?
Yeah.
All right. What song do you wish you had written and why?
Man, Leonard Cohen.
What song?
You know.
No, I don't.
Hallelujah.
Hallelujah. Really?
Yeah.
Why?
Because I love the way he created the backdrop of the song. The song's kind of simply played by piano, but like all the imagery that he created with his words, to me, anyways, I just kind of fell in love with it.
The thing I like about it is.
And I love the way Conrad Lee sings it, so.
Yeah, what's the deal with Conrad Lee?
What's that guy about?
Yeah, he's back
you
in town
what?
Next
that
Saturday.
You know what? I never get a chance to talk to him. I mean, I hang out with you all the time, but Conrad is always so furtive and fidgety, and I'm always like, Conrad, he's like, oh, but he's always too busy. And that goddamn motherfucking Big Gulp. I'm going to grab that cup and I want to throw it across the goddamn road because I think if I could do that, I might get his attention for 2 seconds.
Or you might discover he's like a 98th level black belt and he will kill you instantly with his mind.
But I'm made of plastic. Does it matter?
Yes.
Yeah, it does.
Well, I'll go fuck myself again.
All right.
Continue.
The thing about Hallelujah that's cool is the fact that when he's talking about the fourth, the fifth, minor fall, major lift, that's what the chords are doing mm-hmm. in the music. The thing I don't like is it's become the amazing grace of all, you know, rock musician funerals, and it's overdone.
Yeah, well, you know, I don't listen to a lot of shit, so I don't know that.
That's fine.
So I'm not burned yet.
These are your answers. You can, there are no wrong answers. Just answers we will judge you by.
Yeah.
Okay. Is there a specific lyric or verse that you find so clever, brilliant, insightful, emotional that you'd wish you'd written it?
There's too many, so no.
Is songwriting easy for you or is it hard?
It all depends on mood, right? I think there are sometimes that some stuff comes out of you in like, you know, a half hour and it's brilliant. And then there's some stuff that comes out of you, you know, 4 days and it's brilliant. And
that's one of the follow-up questions. What's the fastest you've ever written a finished song? And what's one that's still lurking out there and how long's that been?
Oh, I Got Friends.
I Got Friends?
I Got Friends was probably 20 minutes.
20 minutes?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then we just came up with the melody of it and how it was going to go.
Yeah.
And simple piano parts.
Very Wesley Willis.
Yeah. You know. Mother's Ball.
Okay. You know. Are you a words or music first kind of guy?
That process, it depends.
Okay.
Sometimes it's the words, sometimes it's the music, sometimes it's a group effort.
Now, this is more of a musician sort of thing, but if you could switch over to another genre or style of music, regardless of whether you had any competence at it, what would you do and why?
Oh, man, there would be two. And one would be opera, and the other one would be jazz.
Okay.
And opera, you know, don't even know where it comes from in some of the people. And the fact that, you know, most of that stuff is not even mic'd and they're filling a hall.
Yeah, I know.
That blows my mind still to this day.
That's why I learned to use my diaphragm.
Yeah.
I've told people when the microphones aren't working, the sound system's down, I don't need a fucking microphone.
It's pretty
incredible.
You know
that. You've got that. It's from deep. From the diaphragm.
And then as far as jazz goes, it's like the Ella Fitzgeralds, man. It's like, wow, man.
Yeah.
They're all over the place.
And
it's beautiful.
A human being can make that sound.
Oh, my God.
A human being.
Yeah.
Okay. Awards, fame, or money. That means either critical acclaim, general popularity, or financial riches. Now, pick two of those, but explain why you didn't take the third.
I'd be the first and last, for sure.
So you would want awards and money, but not fame?
Well, awards don't bother me, but awards are just something that go up on the wall, right? But if that's what you say by critical acclaim, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So then money. Yeah, because I'd like to pay bills, and I don't live. I don't live. No, man, I don't even live lavish. As long as I pay bills to have a roof over my head.
So you're not picking fame. Why not?
You know, the fame aspect. I think it's just what we've learned of fame. It's you're on TV. Everybody knows you. Everybody's, you know, it's, oh my God, everybody's jizzing all over you. Ah, and yeah. I don't want that. I want like a pat on the back and, you know, I want to be able to walk in a crowd and not fall down over people like groveling at me, you know?
Yep.
Okey-doke.
All right.
That would be wonderful too, but it's
fame
not really
don't
me.
Pay the rent.
No,
I mean, yeah, you're noticed. You'll always have a place.
Yeah.
You'll always eat. You'll always have a drink, and you'll always have a place to stay.
If I'm making money, someone knows me. Exactly. If I'm getting awards, someone knows me. So I don't necessarily need the middle.
Okay. Yeah. You are wrathful music god. End someone's career for their sins against music. And explain why.
Oh man, that's so hard. I can't even think of anybody. I love like even
turn on
somebody,
the radio, kill the first one that comes up.
Even like, you know, Tiny Tim, you know? He was brilliant.
Okay. Well, if you don't want to have an answer, you don't have an answer. Then you are merciful music god. Make someone who you think has been unfairly overlooked famous and explain why.
I would go back. The wrathful, I'd be like people like the Beeb, you know? People who think so much of themselves that think they're really great and have an entourage and think okay. they're really great and everybody's stroking one another. That's where I would like go.
So
no.
it's not even about the music, it's about the personalities.
Oh, boom.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sure.
Because I'm wrathful. I'm like a god. I can sure. do whatever Fucking the hell a. I want, man.
Hell yes.
Small penis.
Great. Merciful is a god.
Merciful
make somebody famous who you think is underappreciated. Could be local, could be famous, could be someone you don't think is, you know, respected enough.
It would have to be some of the young local talent that I've seen in the last couple months. I don't know names. I can't say names.
But you know
instance,
who you are.
For instance, a friend of mine's son plays in Moonwalks, and they're an interesting, very cool, eclectic band. And I really, really like them. And they've been doing a lot of touring and they've been open up for some big acts. But, you know, I hope ultimate best. But it would be like something like that. Somebody who's homegrown, not national, but
sure,
you want right. to like pitch your neighborhood, right? You know,
right.
So it'd be kids like that. It'd be like John Skymore, you know? It'd be like kids who are trying to do something that don't have a door open for them. And if I had that ability to kick it open for him, then hell yeah, you know?
Nice. Okay. What's your rock band, Guitar Hero band name, i.e. what's a weird, funny band name you could use? You've already had Swinging Richards, which is really deep.
Yeah, thank you very much.
So you just want to go with that, or you got a new one?
No. You know what? Tim Solomon and Andre Royster and I did a short-lived project that spun off out of some recordings that I did with Tim from Moses 39. And we did a few gigs around town. We called ourselves Popsicle Shiv.
Okay.
I really dug that.
That's awesome. Finally, when your entry in the Encyclopedia of Music is written, what's the most important thing you want said or remembered about you and your music or your art?
Oh, man. He just kept going.
No, well, there you go. That completes the Deep Thoughts Musicians quiz game. A couple more things really quick.
Well,
you did last year. I'm sorry I skipped past this. Last year you did a show with a choir at St. Albertus.
Yeah, it's coming back, actually. We have an opportunity to do it at St. Albertus. It was some crazy idea. I got turned on to... I saw some choir pieces, and it made me think of what if it was like a bunch of crazy... ass people just really being crazy and surreal and Dada and everything. And then started tapping into some churches in
Hermione.
Thank you. Hermione.
Believe me, nobody knew how
to pronounce
it. No one knew how to pronounce that until the first movie came out.
Miss H.
Hermione.
She had turned me on to a friend of hers that knew people at St. Albertus, and they became friends. And it was a labor of love, man. I approached them, and it basically was like almost 2 years later before we did it. And
that was amazing.
So we're going to have the opportunity.
Amazing, so
we made, you know, I made some money to pay everybody, which was wonderful, especially folks that were coming down from Port Huron. That was one of my biggest things.
Came from that far.
Yeah, to rehearse. And we managed to kick quite a nice chunk back to St. Albertus.
Also, you are the subject of a documentary that's been in production, yes. And you did a show up at the Crowfoot called These Are My Friends.
Yep.
What's going on with that?
Right now, they are busy doing a bunch of B-roll stuff and also catching a lot of interviews on people who have been integral to my life and my performance life. Over the last 30 years.
They're just keeping that for your 30th anniversary, aren't they?
We're hoping, but we don't know. Just because, you know, finances are finances and, you know, I mean, what we made from, you know, Kickstarter was awesome. But it's gone into a lot of the stuff that, you know, incidentals and whatnot. So we'll see what happens. It's not going to be something that's going to be out in 10 years for sure. It'll be something, if it doesn't make it for the 30th anniversary, then it'll 35th? Be something that, well, 31st? No.
32nd.
Beginning 30 of the year. And a third.
Beginning of the year, definitely, because there's a lot of film festivals that start around February, April. Yeah. When's the Freep? Free Press is in April, right? No, I think it's in April.
I know where the real ones are. I know when Sundance is.
So yeah, there's a lot of pokers in the fire for sure for this year.
Sweet. You know? Also, you've been collaborating with some other people like Josie Pace. What's going on with that?
Yeah, they pitched Ken, who's the keyboard player, called me up or dropped me a line on Facebook. So I responded and they, you know, apparently he has seen me perform in years past and wanted me to become this like character in one of her videos. And I was.
And the song is?
My Mistake.
I will throw that in the show notes for episode 179 at culturevulturesradio.com.
So that I'm in the video. And so, you know, again, it's a young talent that's got some chutzpah. And if I can be of service and they don't think that I'm a farce, then I'll help, you know? And obviously they don't think I'm a goofball because they had me in their video, right?
Well, so, if you've seen the new Gorillaz video, they got Jack Black in. I think it's more appropriate to have him in it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know,
I'm featured in many females, My Mistake videos.
Yeah.
Many.
But you know, it goes back to giving back. You know, I don't know how people do, you know, community stuff and give back to the community. It just seems like a big ass world to give back to the community. Right. So I give back to individuals that I had individuals giving to me when I was their age.
Right.
And it's only appropriate, I think.
We all go up together. You know, you help, you know, don't look for help. You help someone because it feels right. You don't do it out of a sense of, someday when you're rich and famous, you're going to help me. It's like,
no, man.
Wow, you got something you want to do. Let me help you out with it. You know, don't be an asshole. And, you know, as long as they're not trying to, you know, like steal the shirt off your back and shiv you and take your cat and your food and burn your house down and laugh maniacally
This would be a bad time to say that I have a bumper sticker that says Cass, grass, or ass. No one rides for free? No?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Yeah,
okay. All right. We're going to wrap things up now. Thank you very much to Satori Circus for coming on in and talking to us. CultureVulturesRadio.com. We will have things that we find. We will have some videos. It's episode 179. If you're listening on your podcast, go into the notes and there will be a link directly to the page. If you are on the website, you're already there. If you are finding us through SoundCloud or Podcast Detroit or any other place, CultureVulturesRadio.com, episode 179. Go there and listen to it all again and check out some of our other stuff too and consider our Patreon. We'll talk about that when we come on back. Our final song from Satori is The Air Is Heavy. What is this from and what's this about?
Oh, Air Is Heavy is from Poems We Tell Ourselves. And I wanted to write a piece because I don't remember my dreams. So I wrote a big piece on dreams. And Poems We Tell Ourselves is a line from Sigmund Freud when he was doing all that studying back at the turn of the century. And it was like, blah, 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 poems we tell ourselves, blah, 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 blah. And I was like, poems we tell ourselves. It's perfect.
There you go. Well, thank you very much for coming on down. Story Circus, remember.
Thank you, gentlemen, very much.
June 29th, Gallery in Detroit.
Yep.
In Milwaukee, we will throw the link up on our Facebook page. We will have it in the show notes. If you catch us in the next week or so, the show is Stroke. It's a new look. It's a new style. It's a new sort of thing. And it's going to be awesome.
Yeah. We'll be there.
All right. This is The Air Is Heavy by Satori Circus. We are the Culture Vultures. This is Podcast Detroit.
The air is heavy.
close and follow you. Oh, cool you. In a single day, thoughts on earth's hands digest. Eyes recall the smallest mark of many marks. Every day begins in the dark and slowly glows. To wake the shadows and follow you, oh, cool you. In a single day, thoughts are
Circus with something that I can't remember the title.
Usually have that right up.
Yeah, but the thing is I have zoomed out on the timeline here. It's called The Air is Heavy. And we're just going to leave that in. Anyway, thank you very much for listening so far. Please keep listening if you're just tuning in, discovering us for the first time, culturevulturesradio.com. If you're finding us because Satori was our guest today, please. Also, at the very top of there's a list to our previous interviews that we've had to various Detroit area musicians, bands, mm-hmm. poets, and stuff like this, in conjunction with the Rye Poetry Festival. But Satori's been one I've wanted to talk to for a long, long time,
yeah.
and greatly appreciate him coming in.
And, you know, he and I have done a lot of shows together, and it's only been in the last few years that we've actually been working together. So it's always nice when someone I play with and riff off of, and, you know, we do things together. You know, it's about community. It's about sharing.
Well, the other thing is that, you know, I've known him and seen his work for almost since the very beginning.
Yeah, you've known him like three times longer than I have.
And the fact, though, is that a lot of the stuff we talked about tonight was the first time I heard any of these things. In fact, I was kind of stumped. It's like, how do you formulate an interview with someone you've kind of known and you're mm-hmm. friends with and gives you a big hug when you see him? But it's like, but you don't really know that much.
Right.
You know? So anyway, I hope you all found that edifying, and I hope that you enjoyed what you heard, and hopefully
edifying.
You'll be
nice
willing
word.
To iTunes and Stitcher. Please subscribe to us. And also, if you dig us, we have a Patreon, patreon.com/culturevultures radio. If you go there, and as little as $1 per show, and we do a few shows a month. It's not, it doesn't
and
turn
you know
into
what?
A,
if we get enough, we could sponsor a Satori show.
Yes, we could.
I mean, can you imagine Satori Vultures?
Satori Vultures.
Oh my God. The incorporation of Culture Vultures and Satori Circus with Conrad Lee singing backup vocals.
Ooh, that'd be weird.
I would love Conrad to be the, like, the master of ceremonies. He's so shy and skitty.
Yes, he is. You know? So anyway, Culture Vultures Radio, excuse me, patreon.com/culturevultures radio. If you go there for as little as a buck a episode, you get the show as soon as it's mixed. We are recording, the night before the actual show date. We're on the 21st. And if you are a Patreon subscriber, you would have gotten this already. The podcast will be, we're going to rush this one out because, the show is next week. But anyway, you, get it first. And also we occasionally do a thing called Tinfoil Swan, which is some after show stuff. If we have some extra things we want to talk about. So anyway, please, if you consider, we also give a chunk of money to charity. We promise to give at least 10%, but last year we gave 80. So anyway, we're just trying to keep the lights on, and it's a way that you can,
we always give you more.
Things. We always give you more. Anyway, quick, odds and ends and entertainment news, television news, and from another show that's been salvaged by another network, Netflix has picked up Lucifer from NBC.
Really?
I believe it was at, NBC. Well, whoever had NBC or Fox, maybe it was Fox. Fox had it. Anyway, they're picking up for season 4. So just like The Expanse, just like Brooklyn Nine-Nine, they get canceled and then they come on back. So far, nobody has, picked up Sex Muppet though. Hermione kept watching. She actually, cause I guess the series finally completed and she decided that she was going to finally see how it ended up. And she says it ended up in a manner that was not quite expected. So I'm like,
really?
Oh, that's great. And she told me about it and I didn't care. We have a ghost coming in to the official kitty of the Culture Vultures and she's going to be licking her straw. So that's going to be awesome. What are we drinking tonight? We never actually got around to talking about it.
Autopilot. I applied Satori with, Jeevious? The remnants of Jeevious beer.
Jeevious
so
and some other,
Bob, I'm
some other beer.
Get somebody drunk. Koski supplied the beer for our guest tonight.
And I started off with a Simple Times lager and or Pilsner or whatever I am. I'll take a look at it. And then now I'm drinking Labatt Ice.
Amen to that.
All right. So
don't
also,
bite, kitty.
Moving into also movie stuff like that. AMC now is they've been having problems with MoviePass. We've been talking about them. They're still in business apparently, but
right.
You know, dying. And then also we talked in a previous show about Cinema, which is another competing sort of all semi more than fixed price for several movies per month. Well, anyway, AMC now is offering a $20 a month competitor to MoviePass, where you can see up to 3 movies per week.
Ooh.
For $20. Now, the thing is, if you go to an AMC theater, they are pricey. That's why I don't go to AMC, because they basically have no matinee pricing. It's $9 in the afternoon on a weekend. It's like, screw that. I'll pay
right.
$6 or the $5 or whatever it's going on. One thing I didn't realize, I was doing some research for a post I was putting up, MJR and Imagine are both Michigan-based companies. Imagine
yeah, well
is
we
based,
knew MJR was
yeah but I Imagine is as well
and it's more fun in MJR
clap 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 woo so anyhow so anyway but for $20 but here's the big difference MoviePass does not allow you to go see a 3D or a special format
oh.
or sort of stuff
oh
okay but the AMC deal does AMC
the bullshit
allowed,
horn just got put down for AMC.
The AMC deal means you can go to their Dolby Cinema or IMAX or 3D shows.
So no limitations on the AMC.
Three per week. I mean, I'm sorry, but there's not that many movies that you want to go 3 times a week.
Right.
So,
and, but like for me, Otto Jr. will only see 3D.
But you'll have to start going to AMC theaters. So you'll have to start going to Star John R, probably the closest one.
It's
all right.
More free at AMC.
Yep. All right. The drama between who gets to buy Fox has taken another turn. Comcast has been trying to be a spoiler for
right.
all the kids who want to see that Avengers versus X-Men movie. Well, anyway, Disney has upped their offer to $71.3 billion, which is
this Justin from the Culture Vultures newsroom. Disney is still in negotiations to buy Fox.
Of course, their initial offer was like 55, so obviously they were cheaping out. Well, hey, you're always a bit low.
Billions here.
So we don't know if Comcast is going to come back or whatever, but, you know, hey, man. All right, but you know, as far as now, Incredibles 2 made $180 million, biggest animated opening weekend ever. Right. I'll have a review for that in a moment.
Tell the dinosaurs.
So anyway, all the stories talking about how much the money that made, they also put in the context of the fact that Solo didn't make a lot of money, and the fact that it didn't make a lot of money has led to a suspension of production on the Star Wars story movies. So the Boba Fett and the Obi-Wan movies that have been talked about lately, that they aren't happening, at least at the moment. So
as
the
far
next,
as I heard, the Roundhead trilogy is still on board, on tap.
Well, I haven't heard anything about that and don't care. But the key thing is basically, so the next Star Wars movie will be Episode 9 in December of 2019. J.J. Abrams.
Of the Revenge of Rose Tico.
As we were discussing in our own personal lives before, if J.J. Abrams can somehow pull a rabbit out of his ass for this one, he will, you know, ascend into the highest levels of the pantheon, because
true,
holy crap. I mean, seriously, I mean, obviously they weren't planning on Carrie Fisher being a 60-year-old heroin addict who's going to kill herself with her drug habit, you know, right after they've, you know, killed off Luke Skywalker, you know,
right.
But they've got nothing. Seriously, Rian Johnson put them in a corner. We're not going to belabor it. We're not going to talk about it. But
you know what I heard the title is?
The collateral, what?
Sith is bad. Okay.
Okay. So, I was thinking this has got to be a joke. And there it was. All right. Movie trailers, though, things coming up. Apparently Creed 2 is a thing that's going to be happening. I guess Ryan Coogler is not directing this one, but there's a trailer out and it looks like, Drago's kid is going to be fighting Creed. So what?
He must break you.
Jeez, really? The thing is about this, and here's the key thing, and this is something that's been bugging me. Also, there's a rumor going around. I didn't note this down because I'm like, really? This is just a rumor. But with Alex Kurtzman coming back to be the showrunner for Star Trek Discovery, there are rumors that Picard may be coming back.
Oh, my God. Joey, the guy who feeds me a lot of the pop culture stuff I enjoy,
right?
He is beside himself.
Good or bad?
He can't. Oh, he's like a little kid waiting for Christmas.
See, here's the problem. Okay, there's two ways you can look at this. Oh, cool, more Picard. And the other hand, it's like, wow, we are so creatively bankrupt that all we can do is trade on nostalgia. We can't create new characters. In fact, that's what killed STD, as we talked about when the show was running. What wrecked the show is the fact that they had to tie it in. They had to set it before the original series, even though it looks nothing like it.
Yep.
And they had to make her the unknown, previously unmentioned, you know, adopted sister of Spock, just to tie it all together instead of just clean slating it, jumping ahead 100 years, making it look like a flying Apple store, and doing the exact same story. They could have done the Klingons. They could have done the war. They could have done all this stuff. But instead, they put themselves in a box because they wanted to tie it in, as if we can't accept anything that's not this. In fact, people, as they're wargaming what should have been done with Star Wars, like, you know, they shouldn't have tried to continue on 30 years later. They should have jumped ahead 100 years and then done new characters. Not even made it in Episode 7. Well, it's too late for that one. That ship has sailed and the ship has sunk. All right. So anyway, but yeah, we'll throw a link up for that story there. But I'm just sitting there going, it's like, this is not fixing things. Okay.
But you know what? They can bring Data back. And here's how. And when you see this, you heard it here first.
What's that?
In an effort to advance my programming, I installed a aging chip
that made me look like I would age
like a normal human.
Like I'm 30 years older and I'm fat and jolly.
You heard it here first.
You know, the thing is that when he had the emotion chip in, what was it, Generations, and he's freaking out and stuff like this.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, oh, shit. I'm like, oh, come on, really?
That was great when Data said, oh, shit. You remember when they were on the bridge of the Enterprise and Data said, oh, shit?
No.
That was cool.
No, it wasn't. It wasn't cool when Indiana Jones said it in Temple of Doom, when he, you know, the two swordsmen, he goes for his gun, and then it's like, oh, come on, you know? All right. Anyway, also, Netflix has another movie, which is going to be probably terrible. It's called Tau, T-A-U. And basically, it's about a woman who's been kidnapped, and basically, she's going to be like the final piece of an AI. So basically, it's Demon Seed and also like probably Cube and a whole bunch of other things, because there's other people
and
there.
Lucy and AI.
Well, no, but basically, basically it's going to be like captivity. It's going to be like a, you know, a woman kidnapped, but she's going to fight back against the house AI, and then like the evil human who's, yeah, whatever, man. Anyway, that's coming.
And it'll have a man's voice.
But here's the thing, though. This is coming out the same weekend as Well, see, Luke Cage is this weekend, right? The 22nd?
Yes.
Yeah. What's next weekend? There's something.
Ant-Man and Wasp?
No, no. I'm talking about the Netflix stuff. Oh, geez. What the hell's coming out? I'm drawing a blank.
Don't know. I've been too busy working and getting laid.
Okay. By the way, watch the second episode. Watch the second episode of Kimmy Schmidt mid-season.
Oh, I've watched the whole season.
How was it?
It's good.
It's good?
Yes.
Yeah.
Hilarious.
Seems to be a lot of random stuff going on.
Many times, and I liked the way it ended, although I was a little,
Well, it's only half mid-season.
But the good thing is it left me wanting more.
We started watching, there's a series called The Staircase, which is another one of these true crime sort of things. It's about a guy whose wife is found dead at the bottom of a staircase, and he's charged with the murder. Anyway, it's a 13-part series, and apparently there were, 10 parts, and then there was, 3 more because, years later, there's a retrial or something.
Holy sheep.
So, anyway, I started watching it. I'm only one and a half episodes in, and bro, Hermione is screaming, he did it! He did it! He murdered her! I'm like, are we prejudging things? And then in the second episode, the big twist is oh, yeah, he was bisexual, and he was having an affair with some guy.
Oh, no glass on any counter or table was safe around her at that point, was it?
Don't know. Anyway, I'm only one episode in.
I can see her swatting shit left and right.
Stay tuned. All right. Anyway, Netflix Towel, we'll throw that in the thing. Also, the big movie, Incredibles 2. This is my review, and it's also up at Dirkflix. I've actually been pretty good about putting reviews up, so you'll find them in the show
notes.
For
you get a bell ring for that.
$179. So, Incredibles 2, 14 years later. In fact, they have a little thing before with Craig T. Nelson and Holly Hunter and Samuel L. Jackson. Remember, the L stands for motherfucker. anyway, thank you very much. Hopefully, it was worth the wait. Well, was it worth the wait 14 years later? No, it was not. I was very disappointed by this. I have said in the past that The Incredibles was the last unqualifiedly great movie that Pixar made. The string that started with Toy Story, Bug's Life, Toy Story 2, what the hell was after that? Monsters Incorporated.
Monsters, Inc.
God, there's one more. Finding Nemo and then The Incredibles. That's pretty much those first six movies. Because after that was Cars, and that's
home
when things started getting weird. But yeah,
Beyond bang, 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 bang.
Six killer, The Natural, shooting out the lights.
Yeah.
So anyway, love that movie, and they come to the thing. Anyway, if you've seen the trailer, basically what's going on is it starts off immediately after the end of it. They fight the Underminer. It goes badly. Supers are still illegal, but a brother and sister of Dynatech, voiced by Bob Odenkirk in full Saul Goodman mode, and Catherine Keener, they have an idea to get the superheroes back out there, and they're going to have Miss Incredible, Elastigirl, be the face of things, which means that Dad gets to stay home and be Mr. Mom. And hijinks ensue.
Oh my goodness.
What happens? What do you mean? What happens next?
Yeah.
So what happens is the problem is, and there was a review, this is not my insight, but there was a review that basically said this movie feels like a compilation of plots from a TV series. Okay, this is the one where because the Men in Black erased the boy's mind, he forgets her date with Violet. Oh, here's the one where Dash needs help with math. Here's the one where Jack-Jack's powers manifest himself. The problem is that if you saw the Jack-Jack attack short that was on the Incredibles DVD when that came out 14 years ago.
Which was awesome.
It was awesome. So we've seen this before.
But we also see it at the end of the movie. This is the thing that the retcon that they tried to pull. You have powers. It's like.
No. Hold on. They didn't see it. Syndrome saw it, but they didn't. He was up by the airplane. He didn't see that Jack-Jack had changed.
Now, if I may, they're reaching further than Elastigirl to get us to believe that the
they didn't
family...
see it.
Yeah,
well,
come on.
Well, anyway, so what happens is the big enemy is someone called the Screenslaver, who basically can flash... in fact, they had to put warnings up at the theater, at the box office, that there's strobe effects. So if you have
photosensitive epileptic... Yeah, I saw a couple of reviews that said if you have seizures, don't see this movie.
If you are triggered by flashing lights...
How's that for a poster banner?
Yeah, this is...
If you have seizures, don't see this movie.
Here's the thing, though. The fact that they didn't have this before the movie came out and people started having problems, it basically became a viral Twitter thing. So anyhow...
I could see the pitch guys going, do you think anyone's going to have seizures? Super easy, barely an inconvenience.
No problem.
Seizures are tight.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, The CGI is 14 years more technology. It looks terrific. The camera work is fine. The action scenes are clear and kinetic. They use their powers very well. The problem is that it's only a few minutes longer than the first movie, but it feels simultaneously overstuffed and absolutely empty and boring. There's the scene where the screen slaver explains their plot is done while Elastigirl is flying through the city trying to track down the signal. So you're basically trying to listen and also trying to watch. And we've talked about, like, when I photograph bands, how I have a problem with that.
Right.
It's hard to pay attention. The idea is not as tight as Syndrome's. The whole, if everyone is super, then no one is super.
Right.
That was a tight thesis. You know, the whole family and dealing with that sort of stuff, that was a thing. But in this case, it's too disjointed. Also, the thing is that this takes place immediately after. We're talking days right after the events. Now, if you remember in the first movie, Mr. Incredible and Frozone were sneaking out and listening to the police scanner, and they refer to this in The Incredibles 2, okay? But they're out there sneaking around to do hero stuff, right?
Right.
Well, then, you know, they, you know, are like, get busted and whatnot. But then also remember he snuck out and was training, and he snuck out to do work for, whatever, Mirage or whatever
Syndrome
character was. No, Syndrome, yeah, but who is the chick though? He sent out
Mirage.
The thing is, he was doing this. In this case though, he's basically stay home, watch the baby, and he does this and he becomes a wreck because he doesn't know how to do math. He doesn't know his daughter's mad at him.
He's a man.
And then the stuff like this.
And he voted for Trump.
Stop. So anyway, the point though is that suddenly Bob becomes inert. When he tries to step into things, then stuff happens, and even that's sort of a deal. So it's just kind of disjointed. And I honestly, I'm thinking, and I theorize my review that this is Brad Bird, basically shell-shocked. He's also 14 years older. I mean, he's 60 years old now. He was, you know, 46 when the first Incredibles came out. He was still, you know, I mean, he's been working since the early.
Tomorrowland was supposed to be my Star Wars.
So anyway, but yeah, in Tomorrowland, I found just too cynical for a movie that was supposed to be about an unbridled optimistic vision of the future. At its core, it was super cynical. It could have been a Damien Chazelle movie.
Yeah.
So anyway, I was really let down by it. There's a interesting, they have these shorts in the beginning. There's a thing called, I think it's called Bao, B-A-U. It's about a Chinese woman in Toronto. You see the CN Tower in the background of one shot. Who has a weird dumpling baby. And it's an interesting allegory. It's a cute little, it's one of these silent movies where there's no dialogue and whatnot. But, anyway, it's a good thing. It's a cute little small movie. It's not like the beginning of Up, you know,
right,
but it's sort of thing. But anyway, but Incredibles 2, I give it a 6 out of 10, rent it. It's not, like I said, the fact that so many movies are being hampered by story issues really, really is getting on my damn nerves. So, anyway, that's the thing that's going on. Anyway, as we come on down to the music here, right now I'd like to take a moment to thank our Patreon shout-out level sponsors, Johnny Martinuk and Angus Veritas. Thank you very much for your kind support to that amount.
We love you guys.
If you wish to have your name said, go to patreon.com/culturevultures radio and go there and give money. Right after we taped last week, I go and check. It's like, oh, great, a bunch of people died, you know, in addition to Chris Hardwick's career. Matt Guitar Murphy from the Blues Brothers band. Man. Aretha Franklin's
band. Better think.
He was 88 years old. But, hey, man, he's been coasting on that movie for almost 40 years. So
how ironic that a guitar player lives to 88. There's 88 keys on a piano.
Hey, go figure. Also, the drummer from the Cramps, Nick Knox, passed away. He was 60 years old. And that was kind of a sad thing. And so Lux Interior is now dead also. I don't know what the basis was. Poison Ivy's still around. But I managed to see the Cramps before Lux died. So I did see them live. And then recently, I think maybe today, Coco the gorilla, the sign language gorilla, he passed away, 46 years old.
You know what his last words were, or his last sign was?
What would that be?
I.
Alrighty then. Also, and the little odds and ends stories, there was a health emergency during a performance of, I think it's Henry the something or another, some Shakespeare play, but Tom Hanks came out in character and basically improv for 20 minutes to keep the crowd distracted while paramedics were in there and trying to
nice.
Do it. And there's video of about 5 minutes of this, and it was very fascinating, because I thought, because the way the story was written, it sounded like, oh, Tom Hanks, you know, just jumped out from the crowd. No, he was performing, so he came out as his character, and he did a bit, and it's quite cool, and we'll throw that video and story.
And that's why he's Tom fucking Hanks.
In the show notes for episode 179 at culturevulturesradio.com, because Culture Vultures is a production of Dirk Omnimedia. The show has been created, produced, engineered, and hosted by me, Peter Shorn, playing the role of Dirk Belligerent. Yes. Satori kept almost saying my name. Say my name! The role of Otto the Autopilot is played by Chris Smith. The role of Satori Circus was played by Russell Taylor. The music in the background is Def Ref, and that's Caper, and you can get all that at culturevulturesradio.com. You can download a copy of that free of charge.
Subscribe to us on Conrad, iTunes. Get the fuck out. All right? Conrad's furtive ass has been around all night.
So we, anyway, go there, sign up to get the free stuff. There was a game that we gave away today, something I can't remember what it's called, and you'll find out. Layers of Fear, and we had something else, too. Anyway, once again, broadcasting from the DMZ between Mimeville and Clowntown, we are the Culture Vultures. You all be safe out there.
Peace.
Good night.